All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 23rd, 2015. Just a quickie on the songs. We try to play songs leading in and leading out for the radio program so that they want to put some information before or after our program. Some of them are simulcasting and some of them are rebroadcasting. But anyway, giving it some space, and we do try to pick some appropriate songs for the times and for what we're doing. And those lyrics are posted up on our website on our weekly call. So anybody who wants to look those lyrics up prior to the call, they're there. And what songs we're going to play this week? We play Kansas, and we'll be leading out with another Kansas song called "Backdoor." Okay, we are broadcasting live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening in over another network and you would like to ask a question and you're listening during this time period or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. That's 605-562-3140. Our participant code is 385-698. That's 385-698. One more time, phone call. Phone is 605-562-3140. The participant code, 385-698. Website, nationallibertyalliance.org. www.radiohost.org. All radio hosts are invited, if they'd like, if they have any questions or comments, to get into the queue when we open up on the queue. Anyone who would like to email in a question, send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. And unless Gerard or someone or maybe myself checks the email from time to time during the live program, we're probably not going to take those questions until next week. So that's generally how we've been doing it anyway. So anybody would like to email a question in. We'd like to ask everybody to please support our sponsors, of which the proceeds do go to support the National Liberty Alliance effort. We have Numana, a non-GMO long-term storage food. And we have also East End Rare Coin Dealers of silver and gold. For more information on these, you can click on the banner on the right side of our website and visit their web pages and order some gold and food and silver. We all should be doing that. So hopefully you'll do it through us and help support the NLA effort. We also ask everyone please support NLA's effort by donating. We ask if everyone donates $5 a month or more, you know, click on our donation tab up on the top right. Obviously, we can't do this for free. There's a lot of cost involved here, and especially with the paperwork and stuff that we're doing now, it's really going to start to build up. And so we really appreciate any financial support that we can get. Let's, before we start off with anything else, let's look into tonight's scripture, God's Word. Let me see where we're at. We're going to be looking tonight at Proverbs chapter 1, verses 20 to 33. And the title of this is Wisdom Speaks. Okay, Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief places of concourse, in the opening of the gates. In the city she uttereth her words, saying, How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? And the scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I have called, and ye refused, I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your desolation cometh as a whirlwind. When distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge, and did not choose the fear of the Lord, that would none of my counsel. They despised all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat of the fruit of their own way, and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of the fools shall destroy them. But whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from fear of evil. Okay, that was the mind of God, Proverbs chapter 1, verses 20 through 33. Tonight's topic is going to be jurisprudence. We're going to take a look at that. And, you know, there is a American jurisprudence book, 16th... I believe it's the 16th American Jurisprudence that's out there right now, second edition. And this book is what the judges are supposed to obey. It's a collection of work of the courts over the past 200 years, and using a lot of the Supreme Court rulings and common law procedures and rules. You know, people have asked me before, you know, where do we find the rules and the procedures for common law? Well, the rules and the procedures for common law is common sense. The rules and the procedures ultimately is acting out of principles, recognizing that we are sitting on God's bench. The king of our court is God. It's either God or man, one or the other. And our founding fathers chose a court for God, with God sits on it. And And so the people sitting on the king's court are the jurists, and they're supposed to be acting with principles and honor and justice and mercy. And they're to look at things, you know, really it's a logical approach and seeking out justice. People can figure that out because God's law is written in the hearts of men. So we're driven by the principles, we're led by the principles, and so on. So we're going to look tonight at jurisprudence. You know, when I originally titled this, I left it as jurisprudence, but I did take another title, which we start to read at this. We'll read the new title that I put up on the top of the page anyway. But before we proceed, let me open up. Now, the only people I'd like to get into the queue are people that are leading committees or involved with a group of one kind or another on our website. So I'm going to open up the Q&A. I want you to get into the queue. You have some things you want to talk about, some things you want to reveal where we're going with some things. And I don't know, Sheila, if you have anything, get into the queue. We also, Paul from East End Rare Coins, if you're here, Star 6, if you'd like to address the people a little bit about what your services are. I know New Manor, maybe we'll I don't know if New Manor or anybody representative from New Manor is here, if they want to get into the queue and speak for a minute or two, we can open up the mic for that. So only the people that I had mentioned, Gerard, if you have anything, or Robert, you have anything to add to any of these things before we get going, I just would like to say that we have put together a lot of committees. We're going to be changing the website shortly from contacts. The tab that says contacts, we're going to put there, we're going to rename that tab, and we're going to call it a directory. And on that one directory, you'll be able to find all the people with all the different groups and organizations and groups that are on our website. We have a group for every state, so there are 50 groups out there. They are all active. They have their own interactive area where they can do their own postings and have discussions, and it's up to the state coordinators of those groups to make sure that everything is proper and stays focused and people don't get out of line or put anything inappropriate up on their pages. But we also have some other groups. So we have the Courtroom Observers group out there. And we have a media campaign group. We have others. We have committees. We have all of the county organizers. That's posted up there. We're going to put it all under the directory, so it'll be very easy to find. People hit the directory, and they can find all kinds of things. Everybody that is coming to NLA, everybody that is involved with what we're doing needs to volunteer, get involved with a group, a committee. Let's get busy. We got a lot of things to do. We're going to list up there the district coordinators. And a lot of this stuff is already up there, but we're going to try to organize it better. We have national coordinators. We have the Geek Squad Committee, which really gets involved in the technical situations and problems involved in the background with us, maybe even just trying to gather together information off of the Internet. Anybody who would like that has some computer savvy and would like to get involved with that, they can join. Once we post the name and number of the individual leading that group, you can call that person and get connected and become part of that group. We have people for proofreading. We've got a common law advisory group up there. We're now setting up, and this is one that I'm really interested about. Excited about finally getting involved with this one, and that's Family Court and CPS Committee. It's time now to hold these people to the fire. I think we're ready to go forward with a lot of paperwork filing in the federal courts in our court of record that we have opened, and we are the jury, the grand jury, coming in as the jurist, and it's a court of record, and these people are going to be held accountable. And the pressure is on, and we're going to start really applying the pressure, I think, very soon. Hopefully, we're going to get a lot of papers we've already written ready to go out, and we'll be pushing probably maybe two papers a week, and educating all of the oath takers, copying over 30,000 oath takers across the nation. So we're going to be educating all of the oath takers. In other words, the sheriffs, the FBI, Congress, all of the judges, the Senate, even the state Congress and Senate, and so on, the sheriffs, I think I mentioned sheriffs, the marshals. All of these people are going to be educated by the paperwork that we're going to be filing. They're going to be included in our filing. They're going to become part of this court case. And at some point, they're not going to have an excuse. Well, I didn't know. I didn't understand. I didn't know what to do. And that's the main point. You see, education is the key. That's the salvation of our nation. You know, only the people can save America. And in order for people to save America, you have to be educated. We have to understand what's going on, what our powers, what our authority is, where authority comes from. What is the Constitution? What does it really say? How can we put it to work? I mean, what is the sheriff really supposed to be doing? I can tell you that there are very few sheriffs out there that are doing what they should be doing. Very, very few. And it's not really their fault. They're just as dumbed down as we are. They went to the same schools we did, and they've eliminated all of this stuff from our schools. Well, we're going to put it back up there, and we're going to get it back into the schools. And we're going to hold these people accountable. And the first people held accountable are the judges. Now, they all know. The judges know. And I know they're quaking in their boots. And if they're not, then they're really dumb. They should be. Either that or they should be leaving town, because judgment is coming for them. And either they're going to turn and do the right thing and become become part of the solution of this nation, and maybe we'll forgive them, or they're going to become the focus of this nation, the focus of justice. But the family court system, it's time to get active with this. Anybody who has a family court problem, whether you're stuck in there with the juvenile courts or you're stuck in there with the family court system, and where they bring together and they divide the family, and usually they try to decide which parent, it's usually the male, that they're going to go up against and take them out of the family so they don't see their children. It just totally destroy the children and the family. I mean, just totally destroy them. It's disgusting what they're doing. And those people, I don't think, it's going to be real hard for me to find mercy for those judges. I'm telling you, really, really hard. I'll still preach justice, and I'll pray to God to give me the strength to have mercy, if I have anything to say about these people. But I have to say, it's going to be tough for me. But I will do it. I've committed myself to God to be merciful, to always have mercy available. And it's got to be considered. But the truth of the matter is, some people, well, after you consider mercy, just don't deserve it. And they're not going to get it. So these people better start doing something soon, or maybe they need to look for a new country to move to, because the people are coming and we're tired of it. But I think now is the time. We're going to go after these people on the family courts. We're going to start filling the family courts with paperwork and information. And we're considering doing a class action suit. So if we can really build this momentum up across the nation and get enough people behind us, we will do a class action suit. And we will work as best we can to just put an end to this Nazi court system that they have out there, and get these children back to their parents and start holding these people accountable. So really, anybody, especially who has an issue with this, should definitely get involved with this group. We'll be posting this information up in the next few days. Join in. We're going to have a special meeting on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right in this room, concerning family courts. Try to get some discussion going on it and see once how we're going to go, what kind of ideas we have. And definitely we want to file papers in the federal courts. And then we want to see if we want to go forward with also filing a class action suit. There are other things going on. We also formed another committee, which is called, we don't have a name for this. Right now we're just calling it the Candidate Committee. We're not getting involved with politics. And anybody that becomes part of this candidate committee process and gets involved with politics, we're going to ask them to just leave, because we're not dealing with politics. But we do have to deal with the political process, and we're looking for statesmen, particularly we're looking in the sheriff direction, but others too, people who are really want to be a statesman and stand up for the common law, which is the foundation of our nation, which hopefully after tonight's study we're going to realize how much the common law is the foundation of our nation. But before we get into the jurisprudence conversation, let me open up some mics. I see Eric is here, so let me open up Eric. Eric, go right ahead. You've got some announcements and points you'd like to make.
Yeah, Eric, I'm coming through. Yeah.
You're coming through. Eric is with the Courtroom Observers. He's the coordinator for the Courtroom Observers. We have a Courtroom Observers group, which is an active group. And go ahead, you tell them about it, Eric, and give the information you want.
Yes, we are extremely active this week. I wish I could say we were a little less active because the tyranny is at a fever pitch. Let me just get right to the docket. And the people out there, when they hear the name of a city or a town that I'm going to mention where somebody is looking for observers, that they could kind of perk up their ears and start taking notes. We have someone in Newark, New Jersey. We have somebody in Kansas. We have somebody in New Jersey near Pennsylvania. We have somebody in Cleveland, Tennessee. We have somebody on the West Coast, Astoria, Oregon. So if any of those names or areas are within a couple hours of where you are, I encourage you, please, to start taking notes because we have several people who are requesting observers. So I'm going to need a couple minutes here, John. I'll try to make it brief without rushing through it at too fast of a pace. I'll go chronologically. Tomorrow, our friend Heoja Moore is appearing in Newark, New Jersey at 50 Walnut Street, 10 a.m. in the morning, and she's requesting observers for her case. If anybody is in the area of Newark, could they please show up? I know Jason Berg's going to be there. God bless Jason. He's going to bring some other people with him as well. They're also addressing some other business with the courts. They're having an epic confrontation in a good way with the marshals, kind of pushing the why we're not being allowed access to the courts as the people that we are. That will be a big day in Newark. So if anybody's in that area of New Jersey, New York City, make the trip out to Newark. Make it out early in the morning. Leave early because you're going to have traffic, of course. And get out there to support Heoja and the work that Jason and the people are doing there at the courthouse. Johnny B. in Kansas, if anybody out there in Kansas can hear me, Paring, Kansas, this is near Coffeyville. We don't have a lot of members in Kansas, but I'm hoping the ones that are there can make the trip and support Johnny B. on March 25th, that's Wednesday, at 9 a.m. That's mighty early, but here it is, 102 West 7th Street, and it's Judge Casement. And if anybody can go there and stand with Johnny, that would be a great help to Johnny. This is a right to travel case that he's pursuing, and this affects everyone, seeing the Supreme Court has already ruled that driver's licenses are only for commercial traffic and commercial driving, and if you're just traveling, you have every right to do so without a license. And Johnny's taken it to the court, and I encourage people to stand with Johnny B. in Missouri. I'm sorry, Johnny B. in Kansas. In Lynn Lombardosi, who's a very, very intelligent and she's a bevy of knowledge regarding child custody. She worked with the state attorney general's office in Virginia. She's having her kids, the system is attempting to steal her kids. She's got information that could bring the system to its knees. So if you want to really know what's going on in the family, the atrocities that are being committed in the system, and she was part of it. She actually worked for CPS at one time. She defected and came over basically to our side.
Is she going to be with us on Wednesday's meeting?
I hope so. I'm going to give her a call.
Yeah, get a hold of her because we need the leaders. There are a lot of leaders across the nation who have been spearheading trying to help other families and people to deal with this atrocities of the Nazi family court system out there, which, by the way, is part of the Supreme Court system. They are an appointed court in each state.
And when John uses the word Nazi, he's not using hyperbole and he's not being melodramatic. It truly is absolutely mimicking the system that was installed in pre-World War II Germany where they would seize people's children and then a few months later they'd get a letter, the family would, from the government saying, "We're so sorry, your child expired from a virus he caught at the institution that he was at and we our condolences are with you." It's obscene, okay? And this is where governments go if the people go to sleep, and that's what's happening in this country right now. And the system, the government knows people are asleep, and that's why they're basically feeding on the people and on their money. And this is why the work of the National Liberty Alliance is so important. Back to the docket, Lynn Lombardosi is requesting observers for her case. She's fighting desperately for her kids. You believe, if I had time to tell people what was going on to her in her case, you wouldn't get to sleep tonight. It's that bad. They're literally have seized her family, and she's fighting desperately to get her kids back. She's a very good quality mother, and she's dealing with a family and a government that's absolutely evil. And so anyway, the details of her case would be Belvedere, New Jersey, on April 7th. April 7th at 9 a.m. in Belvedere at 413, that's 413 2nd Street, and it's Judge Kobor, T-O-B-O-R. Boy, I'll bet you he's a constitutional judge. Okay, so anyway, we have Charles Johnson in Cleveland, Tennessee. This one's really near and dear to my heart because I live in Tennessee. Charles is about my age. He's going through a situation similar to mine. Charles is getting absolutely destroyed by his local government, and he's at the point where I really, really want people in Tennessee to show up and support Charles. Let me just leave it at that. And he's a good man, and he deserves our help. I want everybody in the area of Tennessee near Cleveland or over into Georgia. Anybody in northern Georgia should get their rear end up and stand with Charles. You're going to want people to stand with you if your time comes, and you wouldn't believe what's going on to Charles. I'm getting a real awakening myself here, being the director of Court of Observers, because I'm hearing about the atrocities and the tyranny and in all different aspects of court, administrative, family court, bankruptcy, financial, I mean, criminal, everything. It's absolutely, it's unbelievable. The unification that the government has against, well, free America. Anyway, Charles is going to be appearing on April 7th at 9 a.m. in the Bradley County Courthouse. This is in Cleveland, Tennessee. Cleveland, Tennessee. So if anybody in near Cleveland can get there and stand with Charles on April 7th at 9 a.m., the Bradley County Courthouse.
Do you have all the scheduling set up on your board so people can go and look this information up and, you know, become aware of it, keep an eye on it?
As of tomorrow, this will all be posted. I've just been on the phone for the last 5 days.
Yeah, try to keep it sticky so it stays on the top, and then you can always just get in there and change it to, you know, the new stuff and
make it sticky. Yeah, I will. Absolutely. And I do encourage people. I do have people calling me sometimes the night before or 2 days before, and it's tough at that point, but I still will do everything I can. We can still give a shout-out. So the long and short of that is try not to wait till a couple of days before your case, folks. If you want some help, get some observers there. Get your letter in to petition for the right to video your proceedings. So that's your best friend right now in these courts. You can have the best paperwork in the world, and the courts are going to rule against you. The camera is your enforcement mechanism. That holds the court to at least maybe kind of sort of do the right thing. I know I'm getting down the trail of delusion there. So anyway, let me get back to the facts here. Charles Johnson, April 7th at 9 a.m. in Cleveland. Please be there, room 203 at the Bradley County Courthouse. And I would really appreciate it if anybody, especially the people from the American Eagle Party that we had the conference call with, maybe they could get up there. They said they support what the NLA does. They support Quorum Observers. Well, let's show us. And to get some people there to stand with Charles, he really needs support there. He's had threats against his life. And I'm not joking. It's no joke. He's very much in the right. This guy's absolutely not a criminal. He's waiting for his estate. And they are ripping him off to the point where he's destitute. So I really want people to get up there to Cleveland, Tennessee, my old stomping ground, up there in eastern Tennessee, Pigeon Forge, Sevierville, anybody in Tennessee, the area of Georgia, please get up there. And the final one, I've got two more, John, David Lee and Pete Hendrickson, who wrote the book Cracking the Code. He's got quite a few followers. Many people out there might recognize his name. David Lee is one of our great members. He's appearing out in Astoria Circuit Court. This is in Seaside, Oregon. Astoria Circuit Court is at 749 Commercial Street or Commerce Street. I'm sorry I abbreviated it, and I don't know if it's Commerce or Commercial, but it's 749, and I'm sure the Astoria, Oregon Circuit Courthouse is relatively easy to find. It's going to be easy to find, trust me. So that's out in Seaside, Oregon, on the West Coast. Take a drive out. It's a beautiful drive. You could have a nice day and help somebody in the process and really accomplish something by getting out and standing with David Lee. He's got a hearing on the 4th and a trial on the 7th. Did you get that? I've never heard of that. I mean, they've got to be so scared of the Courtroom Observers. I've never heard of jamming up a trial 3 days after the hearing. That's ridiculous. They never do that. It's always a couple of weeks. Never 3 days. They're trying to wrap this one up and get it out the door before the masses of people come out there. And there's going to be a bunch. Robert, our very quality national coordinator that's working in conjunction with Gary now, is going to bring a lot of people out there to help support David Lee. We have good news on the cameras in the courts. Robert called me and said the letter of respectful command that we write to the court saying, I respectfully command that the court honor and enforce my right to film, video, record these matters of public interest on public property, and put that in quotes because that's from the federal case, pursuant to the following two case precedents, and they're up on the Court of Observers bulletin board if anybody wants to see. I'm going to repeat them now, John, because I have got calls from people who are not on the Internet but are on our conference call. So those two cases that people can use to get cameras into the courtroom as a private individual, not media, there will be a different case I can give you for media out of Denver. But this one, these two are federal circuit court decisions. One is from 1995, and it's Fordyce versus the City of Seattle. That's F, as in Frank, O-R-D-Y-C-E, Fordyce versus City of Seattle. And that one says the right to, the First Amendment protects the right to record matters of public interest on public property. That's from 1995, and that's the Ninth Circuit Court. Then you have another one, the 11th Circuit Court, and that was Smith versus the City of Cumming, C-U-M-M-I-N-G, like the voter. And that court, that case said, that was even better. That one said the First Amendment protects the right to record matters of public interest on public property, and specifically a right to record what public officials do on public property. So that one they really don't like. And if that's Smith versus the City of Cumming, 2000, 11th Circuit Court. And if you put those two kids, and this is right, thank you to the court, and sign your name. So that's one sentence. Keep your affidavits brief, people. The big thing that the system has against us, the main reason for existence for the lawyers is two things: set loopholes for them, traps for us. So if you can keep your stuff short and to the point, that always helps. So one sentence: I respectfully command the court honor and enforce my right to record these matters of public interest on public property pursuant to the following two cases. Thank you. And you send that off. Have everybody you know send that letter to the court, even if you're not sure you're going to make it to the appearance. Because guess what? You want to know if you're going to be able to film or not before you go. You're going to want to know if you should bring your camera, your tripod, your rig, your credentials. If they deny you, you may or may not go. So I encourage everybody, even if you're actually not sure you're going to be there, send a letter anyway. It would really help the people who are looking for observers, requesting for observers in their case, because when the court gets 15, 20, 30 of those petitions to film, and I hate to use the word petition because we have the right, it's not a request, we're not asking, but you need to grease the wheel with that letter, do it. That'll get your camera in the court, and that's your best friend right now. So David Lee has a hearing on the 4th in Astoria Circuit Court, and a trial by Judge Phil Nelson on the 7th. So if people can block out those 2 days, if you're anywhere on the West Coast and you can make that drive, it's a gorgeous drive, I've done it, the 4th and 7th of April in Astoria, Oregon Circuit Court. Judge Phil Nelson. And here's the last one I'll get to. Did you have a question, somebody?
That was it started out to be the 4th, but it is now the 2nd of April.
Thank you for correcting me. I believe that you're right. I forgot to make that correction. Okay, everybody. Yeah, and that, very interesting. I forgot to mention that, Robert. That was a big deal. That shows the power of court observers. Robert called me. You did tell me that before, Robert, and I apologize for not making that correction. They changed David Lee's hearing date from April 4th to April 2nd at the last minute. Okay, so they're just jerking us around left, right, and center. It's obscene. Now, so once again, David Lee is going to be on the 2nd and the 7th. All right, so make that correction, folks. I stand corrected. Thank you, Robert. David Lee, Astoria, Oregon, a hearing on the 2nd. What time is that hearing on the 2nd, Robert? I know the trial is on the 7th. That's really the big one, because unless they dismiss everything at the hearing, we're focusing on the big day. The main event is the trial on the 7th, when you want to bring your credentials, your cameras, your friends, your lovers, everybody. But what time is his hearing on the 2nd, in case people want to go to that, Robert?
On the 2nd, the time is 11 a.m.
Very good. 11 a.m. There it is. On the 2nd, and then 9 a.m. for the trial on the 7th.
People may want to get out there early, because what they love to do is the last day or two before, they'll send a letter and move it, and usually it's earlier than later, to foil if they feel that people are going to be coming to show up in that courtroom. So if it's at 11, you should be there at 9, 10 o'clock the latest.
You're exactly right, John. You're exactly right. I've seen it going on all over the place. They did it to Don Levine in Michigan for his case. They bumped it. I called him and said, oh, this is like 24 hours before the case. Oh, can you come in half an hour early? for your hearing in front of the federal court. And oh boy, gee, trying to head quorum observers off at the pass or what? That one was obvious. So we're not going to let them get away with it. It shows the power of what we're doing, people, and that actually getting and standing with people in the court makes a huge difference. Because for every person who shows up, they count that as like 1,000 people, and I'm not joking. When you call your congressman or senator, they count that as between 50 and 100 people who think like you, but didn't pick up the phone and call. When you get your rear end off the easy chair and away from the idiot box and get out there and actually show up, they count that as between 500 and 1,000 people. That's how much weight you have. That's how much clout, how much pull you have when you get up and become a courtroom observer. You're not one man standing. You're a lot of people there because they see that you represent many others who just didn't get up and make it. So while we're on the point of Michigan, I'll get to my final case on the docket. And this is a really, really big one. This is huge. This is Ted. Ted's last name, I believe, is Hendricks or Hendrickson. And Ted, if you forgive me, I'm trying to look up the spelling of your name here because I want to get all the details right on this. This is a giant case. Ted wrote the book called Cracking the Code, and Ted's been taking on the IRS for years. He actually went to prison fighting the IRS and standing for what we all believe, which is the freedom to retain our own money. Hello, this is what this nation was founded on, is it not? We do know the IRS is totally illegitimate, and all the witches of the court seem to be backing them up. So Ted Hendrickson is appearing. Let me get up his details here. Hang tight with me, John. I'm just going to – here we go. Pete. I'm sorry. I keep calling him Ted. Pete Hendrickson. Pete Hendricks. H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S. There we go. All right. I'll stop getting tongue-tied here. Pete Hendricks. Wrote the book Cracking the Code. He's an epic freedom fighter, okay? This is a really big case because guess what? Now, he's done his time, he's, you know, for something that was not a crime. So there'll be hopefully a lot of white stripes going on, some black robes of the judges that put him in prison for standing for his money and for his freedom. Anyhow, guess what they're doing now, people? They went after his wife. They could not nail her for tax fraud. They could not nail her for tax delinquency. They could not convict her for tax evasion. They couldn't get her on any tax charge. So the IRS handed her a piece of paper and said, sign this. She said, I'm not signing anything. I'm just, you know, you have no, I've already been vindicated. They submitted to the court. The judge is saying, if you don't sign that piece of paper, that the fraudulent piece of toilet paper that the IRS handed you, you're in contempt of court. She's already been convicted. She's going up for sentencing. And it's extremely important that we pack this courtroom because this is a precedent-setting case. A, he already made they already went after him for reprisals. B, now they're going after his wife as a reprisal. And since they couldn't even make a tax charge stick, they're levying some absolutely absurd, obscene contempt of court charge against her for standing up and saying, I can't be forced to sign anything, which you can't. The government, nobody can hand you a piece of paper and say, you have to sign this. You have every right to say, no, I'm not going to sign anything. You don't have to sign anything, zero. That means nothing. No matter who tells you what, you are not forced to sign any piece of paper. You can stand for your, what is it, the Fifth Amendment, I believe, John, prevents you from incriminating yourself in any way. Whether you're a criminal or not,
you cannot be held to answer for anything, and that should be the position. But you do have to remember that you're in a chancery court, which runs and operates as a court of record under the laws of chancery. So you're really in a very, very dark and hard place to fight, and you have to understand that. And there are some strategies. I don't know if they know these strategies. I hope they do. If not, maybe they can give me a call personally. We could talk a little bit about some of the strategies that they need to realize. So,
absolutely.
But anyway, we're running pretty close to time.
I would get him your number. I just wanted to put that appeal out there big time because this is really disgusting the way, I mean, they're going after his wife, and then they can't make the tax charge stick, so now it's some dreamed-up contempt of court charge. So anyway, this is sentencing now. We need to get there and really put the heat on this judge because, you know, the only thing right now that's going to help them is public pressure. So the details of the case are April 9th at high noon in the court of Victoria Roberts, and this is Detroit at the Circuit Courthouse in Detroit, and the address of the courthouse is, oh God, it's going to escape me now, John, and if it does, I will call you back on the queue.
You can post it. Make sure you post it up on your board there,
yeah,
on the Courtroom Observers.
There's so much stuff. It was quiet for a few weeks there, and then all of a sudden the tyranny is coming out of the woodwork. It does, let us know that Courtroom Observers is growing.
There's one other subject matter I want you to touch on, and that's that sheriff committee thing that we're starting to put together.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you gave me an extra minute to discuss that, because this is huge, folks. We have really, really big news here, and this is as big as any news that I think the National Liberty Alliance has ever had. We have our first candidate who's willing to run as common law sheriff. Not constitutional sheriff, although he will be obeying the Constitution. We are fully aware that the, quote, constitutional sheriffs really like to call themselves that but aren't really walking the walk.
Anybody that wants to run for sheriff anywhere, any listener, anybody that has had it and feels that they're capable of running for sheriff in their county,
you.
Get in touch with us. We'll support you, and we will teach all these sheriffs the ins and the outs of common law, the Constitution, and that's what we're doing anyway on Mondays, and our page up there on the media page, when you click on that, which we'll talk a little more about that later, it's an education. Our civics course is all part of that. Anybody who wants to run for sheriff should get a hold of the – we're going to have to find a director for this particular committee to support candidates for sheriff. Now, we may go further into other candidates for other things, but right now we're going to focus in on sheriffs because that's where we really need them. We need some good sheriffs
out
there. But go ahead.
For now, John, I'll be happy to take up the charge and lead because I am really passionate about this common law sheriff thing. We need to have preferably somebody, who has maybe some military experience. If you have some, experience as a peace officer and you're firmly into the common law, great. We would welcome you with open arms. Or anybody with firearms training, Second Amendment experience would qualify. Somebody with not too much dirt in their past.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Basically people that have firearm experience, wherever that comes from, that's the key. That could be just someone who's a hunter and really is into guns and understands the ins and the outs.
Somebody who has a table at a gun show, somebody who owns a gun store, somebody who's just a Second Amendment aficionado, who owns a small business, whatever your position is, you don't have to be some highfalutin person. We're going to back you up. If you were going to run for common law sheriff, we'll stand behind you through the risk and through the reward. And I really encourage people to step up to the plate. I know there's a lot of old-timers out there who are sitting around doing nothing. Think about it. You could run for common law sheriff against one of the biggest tyrants in your county, and most of the sheriffs are not being constitutional sheriffs. And right now, with the drug war still being unlawfully executed against the American people, and the private property seizures, both mortgage and tax, sheriff's auctions taking place on the front steps of the courthouse because they can't lawfully do it inside the courthouse, okay? And then the sheriffs and the marshals all executing the property seizure. I don't see a lot of hope in the sheriffs out there, so I really would like this. It would really make my day if we had somebody from the peace officer community who would step forward and say, yes, common law sheriff. Constitution, it sounds good, but I've heard the statements from constitutional sheriffs that they would, the following statement, as long as we have orders from a local judge, then we're okay. Oh, great, that doesn't make me feel any better, because the tyranny of the local is just as bad, if not worse, than the tyranny of the federal at this point, and I know for a fact I've been observing. So, this whole thing that, we need orders from a local judge, they're gonna stop and trample your freedom worse than anybody. They're not your friend. The problem is the constitutional sheriffs don't want to have to go arrest their buddy, the judge, or their buddy, the trooper, who are violating us every day. They don't want to deal with that. A common law sheriff may be forced to do that someday by an indictment from a common law grand jury. So we need to know we have a sheriff in office who's going to do the right thing, stand for the Constitution, stand for the common law, stand for freedom. So who is our first candidate? The envelope, please. Steve from Utah. Stephen Dean, our Utah State Coordinator. He's an awesome person. I've talked with him before. He's really understated, well-spoken, non-political, clear-headed, knowledgeable about the common law, a great people person, very positive and upbeat. He doesn't go on and on. He's very, like I said, very understated, kind of a quiet man, and I think just the guy that we need to establish a foothold in the common law.
And the key point here, non-political. non-political. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, it is a political process. It is a political position. And it's, you know, we have to get involved in a political process. But it's the politics, really. It's non-politics. But we got to move on. So if you can wrap it up, Eric.
I'm done.
Oh, okay, great.
Sure, everybody. So anyway, it's in one last thing. The place that the county in which Steve is running is Millard County, Utah. So I ask people to turn their eyes to Millard County, Utah, support Steve, send him an email, send a shout. He's the Utah State Coordinator for the National Liberty Alliance. So he'd be relatively easy to find. He's a great guy, and I fully encourage people to support him in every way, and we really need other people to step up to the plate and do the same thing that he is doing, which is take the chance, take the risk, you know, no guts, no glory. Put your money where your mouth is. It's not going to cost much because we're going to, you know, we'll back you with the labor and the publicity, and it doesn't cost much money to run. Just get out door to door and start passing out flyers, and we will stand by you all the way in your effort as common law sheriff. And hopefully, we would really like to see the tag team tyranny takedown of a common law sheriff and a common law judge running together.
Right,
in a county.
That's the other position that we will help to support, anyone being that wants to elect as a common law judge. So, obviously. Okay. All right. Thank you. And again, you know, up on nationallibertyalliance.org, up on our top blue bar, which right now it says contacts, we're going to change that to directory, where we're going to start listing all of these different groups and different committees that are involved and what we're doing. We even have a welcoming committee, so people who are joining us now are getting phone calls from a welcoming committee who are, you know, trying to get people tied in, find out what kind of strengths they have, and trying to tap them in and tie them into whatever we can to get involved. Look, at National Liberty Alliance, our purpose is to save the nation. That's what we're here for, to restructure the common law process and procedure here, to get good people into the political process, and to enforce the Constitution, the common law, upon all of these oath takers, and to teach those who don't know it. So that's what we're here for. And so everyone that's here tonight on our meeting, and anyone that is listening in from off the radios or listening in off of simulcasts or even downloading and listening in off of the MP3s, look, you got to get involved. You got to put some time in. Go out there and consider all these different committees and different things that we're doing. If you're good at research and investigating, we need investigators. We need people in research. We have a research and investigation committee. We'll be posting all this up. It should be posted this week, hopefully, get it all together. And let's get involved. You got to put your time in somewhere. You know, the nation's not going to save itself. The people can say only the people can save the nation. The Constitution can't defend itself. Only the people can do that. This is your job. This is your duty. This is your nation. You have to. Everybody that is part of America needs to step up and do something from time to time. And
hey, John,
and this is your time. Yep.
John, the address of the courthouse where they're abusing Pete Hendricks' wife is called the Theodore Levine Federal Courthouse. It's in Detroit, Michigan. It's room 226. That's the Theodore Levine Federal Courthouse, room 226. And it's near Washington and West 4th there in Detroit, Michigan. So I urge everybody up in Michigan and Ohio to get there and support Pete's wife at her sentencing for contempt of court, because she stood her ground and refused to sign the document that was being forced upon her. Thanks, John.
Okay, thank you, Eric. Okay, I think we have, Paul, 631-728. Is that you, Paul?
Yes, do you hear me?
We can hear you. This is Paul with Gold and Silver?
Yes, it is, John.
Okay, all right, we have you on the line right now, Paul, with East End Rare Coins. He's a dealer of silver and gold since 1981, and, you know, we have his site connection, what would you call it, the banner on our right-hand side of the site. And look, at silver particularly, but gold, precious metals, this is what's going to get us through the hard times after the real hard times. And the hard times are coming, you know, the time when we, not just the economy collapse, we're talking about a monetary collapse. The dollar's going to be worthless. One day we're going to wake up and the dollar's going to be worthless. And depending on what's happening at that time, if we the people have control, it'll be a soft crash. But if we don't have control, it's going to be a hard crash. And really, the only thing that's going to get you through at that time is food, water, and shelter, and you know, fuel. and ammunition. That's what's going to get you through the beginning of the hard times, and eventually we'll get back into bartering and exchanging, and I personally believe silver is the way to go. I like silver coins, particularly the old silver coins, and because everybody understands the silver dollar, they understand the quarter and the dime and the silver half dollars. So that's kind of my thinking, and at some point, that's what you're going to be able to use to trade for food. And a silver dollar will buy you quite a few dinners for your family to get you through the week, and so people should be putting this up. After all, you can cash it in for dollars at any time anyway, but you should be, and silver right now is at an all-time low. Now is the time to buy, that kind of thing, but also the food, and maybe next week we'll have someone representing the food to talk, but I'd like to introduce Paul now from East End Rare Coins, who maybe tell us a little bit about himself and his company and what he has to offer, and hopefully people will start to get themselves ready for the hard times that are coming one way or the other. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, thank you, John. Hi, everyone, and good evening, and a pleasure to meet you all. I am the owner of East End Rare Coins on Long Island in New York. I have been an active coin dealer since 1981. I have actually, due to my great uncle, been involved in the business since I was 13 years old. I have been in this business 32 years. I was there in 1979 through 81 when there was the spike in the price of gold, which at that time was an all-time high. The price of silver was up to $54 an ounce, and the clamor was on. I remember my grandfather, who had saved old silver dollars from his earlier days when they were taken out of circulation. He had bags of them hidden in his basement. And when silver hit $54 an ounce, because it wasn't a crisis like I feel what we're approaching at that time, but it was a situation whereby all of a sudden that dollar was worth $54 just due to inflation. And as John has said, silver coins have been the basis of our currency, or were the basis, rather, of our currency for 200 years, since the inception of this country, until 1965, when the silver content of the coins exceeded their face value, and therefore the silver was replaced with worthless metal. Since that time, these silver coins, the public started to hoard them, and they have become increasingly scarcer and scarcer and scarcer. And the reason they have is what they represent is the truest form of money. You have to remember, at one time, when they printed silver certificates or gold certificates, they actually said on the paper currency, redeemable in gold coins, redeemable in silver dollars, where you could literally walk into the bank in 1918, 1917, and you could get a silver dollar for your $1 bill, or if it was a $5 certificate, five of them, so on. If it was a $20 gold certificate, you could get a $20 gold piece. You know, John spoke earlier about, you know, hard crashes and soft crashes. Well, you know, the last hard crash being the Great Depression, when the currency completely collapsed, they passed legislation called the Pittman Act. And under the Pittman Act, all our great-grandparents or grandparents or whomever had to go to the bank. They had to take their $20 gold pieces, which had an ounce of gold in them, turn them into the bank, and they were given a piece of paper that, instead of saying it was backed by gold, now became backed by the good faith of the government. Obviously, there was the need to print more currency than we could back. Well, today we're kind of in a similar situation. I feel as though the financial institutions, it's a time bomb. It's unsustainable, the amount of debt that they keep building. It's unsustainable to keep printing the amount of paper that we are printing. The only reason the dollar is artificially inflated right now is because of what's going on with oil in the Mideast. Once that reverses itself, and I've seen this happen many, many times, the dollar will take quite a hit on the open market. It's only strong right now because it still is the petrodollar, but not for long, because other countries behind our back are scheming to replace us as the petrodollar by becoming, for instance, China wants to become 100% gold-backed currency. These silver coins are most important to own when things are the worst. That's when they have the most value. And a dime, a quarter, a half dollar, we all remember them, are highly recognizable, and because they are silver, will obviously be worth more than their face value, which they are now. For instance, every dollar's worth, whether it's 10 old dimes, 4 quarters, 2 half dollars, any combination, every dollar's worth of these pre-1964 silver coins that were originally only a dollar contain a silver content of $12.16 as we speak, based on the current silver price. So they're worth 12 times as much as when they were issued. They have been much higher, of course. We've seen spikes in the price of silver in the past, most recently after the crash of 2008. Right now, silver is a bargain, and the Federal Reserve and the government are manipulating silver and gold prices to keep them down. God forbid the cat gets out of the bag, the fact that we don't have any, and we have nothing to back all the paper that we're printing. So if we ever hit a situation, which I feel as though is inevitable, because, as I said, it's unsustainable, it's going to happen quickly. There's not going to be an announcement that the currency's going to crash. You're going to wake up in the morning, the bank's going to be closed. It's that simple. And the only thing that's going to talk is real money, whether it be silver or gold. I'd like to make it very clear that whether you're purchasing silver or gold outright in relation to asset allocation, in relation to your own circumstances, or just accumulating it monthly to the best of your ability, it's very important to be buying when nobody seems to want it. Because when everybody wants it, that's not when you want to be buying it. The basic rules in any commodity. It's highly recognizable, as I said. It offers the smallest sizes of silver if you had to use them. For instance, if you had a 100-ounce silver bar and you had to use it at a grocery store, good luck getting change when that day comes. Whereas if you have little silver dimes, silver quarters, silver half dollars, you're in a much better position to barter right on the spot for the exact amount of money it is that you need to spend. So it's highly recommended that you, to the best of your ability, either make an asset allocation, because, again, during the worst of times is when you'll appreciate owning real money the most. It's when it will have the most value. As NLA members, and now that I am myself, and John has been kind enough to allow me to be a vendor for the NLA, I have listed on that site, the phone number on there goes directly to myself, not to any representatives. The idea being, I want to give the personal attention that only my experience, the fact that I'm the owner of the company, and we, of course, don't want salesmen in between you and your price and needless commissions. So the idea is to offer you the lowest possible prices. NLA members receive free shipping, which can be substantial, especially with silver, because of its weight. The idea is to make myself available to you folks. Pick up the phone. I love to impart knowledge. I have no problem sharing knowledge. I don't want you to feel as though you're obligated to do anything. I am always open to answering any questions, educating you to whatever extent it is you desire. I welcome my wealth of knowledge being available to all of you members. So in ending, basically, again, I want to point out this is the time to start accumulating relative to your own situation, of course. Of course, nobody of any conscience could say, go mortgage the farm and put everything you have into silver coins, okay? Whether it be that you start with $150 a month and just accumulate, because we don't know when that day is going to come, or whether you're in the position to say, well, the prices are very low right now, and I have substantial means, and I'm going to allocate this percentage of what I have, I offer my guidance in those decisions, okay? It doesn't matter how much you want to buy, and it doesn't matter how little you want to buy. If you only want to buy monthly, or if you want to take a stance and buy larger and take your position and feel safer, I will tell you from personal experience, it's a great feeling to be in the house and know that I have real money stashed away in silver coins and gold coins, along with, of course, as John pointed out, my food, my energy, and my ammunition. It's a great feeling of security. And as I said, you're not going to get a wake-up call on this. This is going to be just like it was for Grandma and Grandpa when they had to turn their money in at the bank, or they'd go to jail if they were caught with gold. It was illegal to own it until 1974. Sizable fines and imprisonment for owning real money. How absurd. Silver dollars, they stopped making because they couldn't back them either. They tried to make them again in 1934 and 35, but they couldn't sustain it. Many of you know the old silver dollars. They're highly recognizable. Many of you know the old silver dimes, quarters, and halves. Many of us, I'm sure, on our paper routes didn't realize what we were being handed at the time, and maybe because we were kids didn't realize to hold on to it. But I've run across a lot of people now who call me up and say, could you come look at all this stuff that my mother and father kept in these bags and tell me what it's worth? And I'll go over there and sit down at their kitchen table, and the next thing they know, the $1,000 worth of change from pre-1965, they have $14,000. That's how much it's gone up. That's how much the U.S. dollar has devalued. Okay? So I highly recommend doing something rather than nothing. And as I said, you never want to be Johnny come lately. Johnny always shows up late for the party. And when that party starts, you want to already have your seat. Okay? And, John, I thank you for the time.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. And of course, all the proceeds goes to supporting NLA's effort. And
I admitted the fact that every purchase that's made by an NLA member, besides me giving a discount and free shipping, will result in a donation to the NLA cause.
Okay. All right. And again, you know, we're not here to sell anything, but we do have to survive on the one hand, and we decided, well, this is one way to make some money in order to support the NLA effort, and that is to really offer products that are necessary for survival in times coming. So, and of course, silver is one of them. Okay. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate
the time. All
right.
Thank you for the time, and good evening, folks.
Okay. All right, and we're running kind of behind here. We still have to get to the topic for the night, jurisprudence, but I do have one other person that we're going to unmute here. Sheila, if you can keep it short, you may have an announcement, anything particularly you want to say concerning where we're at, what we're doing in the media campaign. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Good evening, everybody. Yeah, I just want to, you know, say my name is Sheila, and I live in Orange, New York, and, yeah, I'm on the media campaign group. And what we do is, or what I've been doing, is promoting constantly in all aspects of social media so that we can get this word spread out regarding National Liberty Alliance. Now, what we have been focusing on is the 1 million signatures, because each body represents eventually an educated American. So that's very important that people still, you know, try to get out and get these signatures. The second thing which is incorporated with this group is CPS Division. We have met several times and mapped out some plans as to, go out and recruit families that have had issues with CPS. I just recruited two new members. They are Orange County organizers. They are in the process of taking the test for administrators, and they also lost their little boy. So I want to welcome Beatrice and Julius Harris.
And we're going to do everything we can to get those children back. I mean, we're going to go hardcore, hardball in the courts, pulling no punches and taking anybody out that we possibly can take out to bring justice back into our family. We need to get rid of family court systems. The whole thing is a sham, and there is something else
yeah.
we could do. But in any event, look, if we don't protect our children, and, you know, you could tell what kind of a nation it is by what they do and what they allow people to do to their children. It's time to step up and take care of our children. Let's do it. But go ahead, Sheila.
Absolutely. And I just want to say real quickly, yeah, it's been my baby for many years. I have done so much extensive work. I am a victim as well. A family member has had our family member's children kidnapped. So it is very serious to me, and it's very, it's something that needs to be really addressed. So we've been working very, very hard on that. So I just want to say that also we did set up a time, Gina, who, when I had spoken to you prior, that, you know, I was talking to you about the division, there's also a meeting on Sunday night at 7 p.m. And we have been recruiting members.
Is that going to be for the CPS, for the children's stuff?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you do know we have something on Wednesday. Let's pull
right.
it off on Wednesday, and then we'll see where we go, because we want to go really fast with this, particular
movement. Absolutely. This is what we've been doing, John. Yeah, this is, we've been meeting, I just met with Gina last night, and because I haven't spoke with you, but we were working on the bringing in the lawsuit, the class action lawsuit, the whole thing. So
I was on Shake and Wake Radio the other evening, and we were talking with people who were involved with the CPS problems and the family courts, and I gave them some thoughts and ideas, and I realized that maybe it's time to spearhead a movement for this, because this can also get us, the common law grand juries, a notoriety, because we're going to look at these desperate times calls for desperate measures. And mm-hmm. there is no one here that seems to be stepping up to champion for our children. And someone has got to step up and champion for our children. And since we don't have anyone in office, these all these people that are oath takers, and nobody is stepping up for it, well, then the people need to step up on it. And we decided that the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, as a power and an authority to bring and open the courts of record up and be the authority within that court, we're going to champion for our children. And again, it's kind of something like this hasn't really been done. But it's not like it can't be done. We're free people. We could do what we want. And desperate times calls for desperate measures, and we're going to take these courts back one way or another to begin with. But it's time now to start getting our children that have been abused and their families destroyed, and just stop this insanity. So,
absolutely, I totally agree. So I'm gonna yield, but I also want to mention up on the site there is the CPS division, and there is a list some families that have had some issues, and more importantly, a lady by the name of Nancy Schaefer, who a few years ago, William Wagener and I was promoting her, but then all of a sudden she was killed. But everyone, really, reiterate on you going and taking a look at that video and listening at her. She was a senator. She lost her Senate seat behind fighting for families and fighting against family service. So that's about it.
Let's get together when we can and discuss some strategies on this, and let's put something together. Okay, we're going to move on now.
What about tomorrow, John? I need a specific time because I've been extremely, extremely busy.
I got so many things I haven't got done, and I should have gotten done. But let's see. Tomorrow is Tuesday, and it looks like, you can probably get me late morning, early afternoon.
Okay.
If you want, let's talk. And I don't know where we're at with other things. We'll talk tomorrow. Okay.
Okay,
let me
John.
Go because
All
we're
right,
running late.
Thank you.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
I yield. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to go back to the lecture mode for right now. We'll open up the Q&A in a short while. Now we're going to get to our topic. We're running late on the topic. I'm going to try to move through here quickly. But like usual, all of the topics we go through, what we're going to be reading tonight is available. You can follow along. You can download a copy at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on media, and you'll come down and you'll see the list of important papers which will teach people in the courts how to get through the courts in the process. And just real quickly, because this is extremely, extremely important, I get a lot of people who really, they want me to help them to do this or to write that, and I just can't do that kind of thing anymore. I'm just way, way too busy. But you know what? Look, people have got to defend themselves, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this. This is not real difficult stuff. Yeah, it's new, so it seems difficult in the beginning, but forget about trying to remember anything. Always remember to just understand everything you can. So just understand. If you don't understand, stop, go back, review it, and don't move on until you do understand what it is that you're reading and looking at. But all of a sudden, things will start to click in. The next thing you know, these terms and ideas and thoughts will start to just, spill out of your mouth, and you'll be very surprised, just like anything else. So you'll figure that out. But anybody who really has to get into a courtroom, let me tell you something. You can't defend yourself unless you have some knowledge. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Thomas Jefferson said it's not going to happen. But and that's a fact. But look, you have to take our civics course. That is really the primer for what we're doing. And in our civics course, we have a common law course, a very long common law course. I think the length of that, it's about 30 hours of common law in there. And we also have constitutional stuff in there, a constitutional course, and of course we have history. So look, that is very important to take. But the next thing to do on what you should be doing at the same time is come to this media page. Now, in the media page, we have the papers that we've been filing with the federal courts. And right below that, you will see a list of papers, and it says the following papers defined important legal terms and positions that we, the people, should have knowledge of and can assist you in the court. This is the paper that you need. These are the papers that you cut and paste out of this. We put this up both on a PDF and Word, so people can cut and paste out of the Word, then the footnotes will transport with it. And that's why we put the Word up there. For people who don't have the Word, and they can open up a PDF and read out of that and write their own papers fresh. But you can do some cut and paste in PDF, but it will not carry over the footnotes. But anyway, I posted up there just over this weekend a court of record example. A lot of people want to know how to open up a court of record. And again, here's an example, lays out the paperwork, gives you all the basic nuts and bolts of the paperwork for opening up a court of record. But that coupled with taking the civics course and then looking at all these other papers, you will notice that one of the things that we deal with is jurisdiction, okay? Jurisdiction is established in your papers. And we have a paper up here that deals with jurisdiction, and we pretty much took the whole paper and put it inside of the court of record example because you want to establish your jurisdiction. You want to make it clear to the judge by what authority you're coming in, and you're going to let him know by what authority and how far his authority goes, which is pretty minimum. And you're going to hold his feet to the wire to jurisdiction. So anyway, reading papers and looking at the footnotes, because look at to really learn this stuff, look at the footnotes, see the research or the additional commentary concerning the meanings of words that are in view here. Understand the power and the authority of words, and if you can master a good paper and bring it into the courts, they don't really know what to do with it, and if you understand the strategy. And there is a strategy, and we will start teaching a little stronger some of this strategy as time goes on. You can master this strategy and be able to deal with these people, and you'll confuse them. And believe me, they'll start to bend and break, but you have to master it. Okay, tonight is jurisprudence is the name of the topic, and I'm going to try to move through this quickly. Again, you can get a copy of this up at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on media. And it is the, where is it? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth paper down under the PDF, and we also have Word. It's the sixth paper down there also, and you can follow along. I'm not going to read footnotes, of course, but we're going to go through this, and I'm going to try to move a little fast. Okay. On the top, I gave this rule by man or God, because that's the bottom line. You have to understand what jurisprudence is, because the bottom line, in short, jurisprudence is the philosophy of common law, and common law is the law of God. It's the law of the creator of the universe, the governor of the universe. It's his law, it's his bench, and we sit on his bench, and we bring the principles in order to bring forth that which is just and righteous. And, if you go into Black's Law Dictionary and look up, and I know in the third edition, they changed it after this, but in the fourth edition. In the fourth edition, if you look up justice, you'll find that justice is synonymous with virtue, the attributes of God. That's what justice is. And if we want justice in our court, we're saying we want virtue in our court. We want the attributes of God. We want God's righteousness to make the right thing happen. And that's what we want. Justice. So jurisprudence, again, the 16th American Jurisprudence, second edition, which is the latest out there, I believe. And this particular, again, this is a collection of the work of the courts of the United States, the Supreme Court of the United States. And again, it's built upon common law and, in short, the philosophy of common law. When these people say common law is no longer available, passé or whatever, they don't know what they're talking about. They were taught that lie and they repeat the lie. They regurgitate it. Well, we're going to start shoving that truth right back down their throat so they don't have to regurgitate the lie anymore. Okay, rule by man or God. That is the bottom line. William Penn said, a people who will not be ruled by God are destined to be ruled by tyrants. Bottom line, end of the subject. No matter how good people might think someone is, and you're going to be ruled by some man, some judge that's going to sit up there and make a decision for you and your family and your life, and you think that over a period of time that you're going to get other good men to replace a man that might be just, forget about it. It's not going to happen. And unfortunately, judges are political. Jefferson spoke about this. You can't trust them. Okay? They need to be traffic cops only and be held to the law. 16th American Jurisprudence, Second Edition. Jurisprudence by which all judges are bound by oath to obey jurisprudence. It's a book. It's what the judge is supposed to be ruled by. It's like they've never seen this book, it seems, when you go into these courts. It is the science of the laws. By science here is understood that connection of truths which is founded on principles, either evident in themselves or capable of demonstration. A collection of truths of the same kind arranged in a methodical order. In a more confined sense, jurisprudence is the practice science of giving a wise interpretation to the law and making a just application of them to all cases as they arise. In this sense, it is the habit of judging the same question in the same manner and by this course of judgment forming precedences. In short, jurisprudence is the philosophy of common law. The jurisdiction of a court falls under two categories. Number one, a court of record, and number two, courts not of record. A court of record is a court of law, which proceeds according to the course of the common law. Now remember, there's lots of footnotes in these papers, and people should be following along with this, and on your own time, you should go back and reread this and look at the footnotes, because that's where the nuts and bolts, that's where the fruit of this paper is at, right there in the footnotes. which proceeds according to the common law, whereas courts not of record are nisi prius courts that proceed according to statutes. A court of record is a superior court. A court not of record is an inferior court. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. You don't want to be in a statutory court. Every court in America today is a statutory court, and that's why the people are being raped in the courts. They're being fleeced, destroyed, families destroyed, your work, everything you've done taken away in the courts. You go to they destroy us when we're young in the family courts, and then they get us with the old in the probate courts. And by the way, we'd like to put something together also for the probate courts and deal with that problem, and also the mortgage courts. Okay, so we need to look further into this over the next couple of weeks to see how we can develop. But it's up to the people. We have to start to come together and really organize and really go in there to see if we're going to straighten these problems out or not. Either we're going to do it or we're not. The people have to act. Okay, any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to common law. It is an inferior court. Acts and judicial proceedings of courts of records are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony, and which have power to fine and imprison for contempt. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity, which have no power to fine or imprison. Let me repeat that. Courts not of record have no power to fine or imprison. What are all these people doing in prison? Why are we going into these courts, giving up our money to these judges through fines for all these things that they just fleece us with? Why are we? It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. They have no authority. They cannot do it. It's a crime. What they are doing is a crime. It's a felony. We can put them all in jail. So, and which have the power to fine or imprison. Let me go back. Acts and judicial proceedings of courts of records are enrolled, recorded for perpetual memory and testimony, and which have the power to fine or imprison for contempt. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity, which have no power to fine or imprison, and in which the proceedings are not enrolled or recorded. A court not of record has such power to punish for civil contempt as is specifically granted to it by statute. Since there is no authority to those statutes, because it's null and void, why? Because it's repugnant to the Constitution. Since there is no authority, the people being that authority, for such power, all such legislation is null and void and a violation of due process. You can sue that court in a higher court, which is your court. You take it to the federal level. Why? Because it's a federal offense. That's why. Coram ipso regi, Black's fourth edition, before the king himself. Under our founding documents, that would be the governor of the universe. He is the king himself. A court for the people and by the people through a jury, also known as the king. God's that king, the king's bench, also known as the king's bench. God is the king. We sit on that bench. And we reflect his will and his authority by acting with principles and integrity, bringing justice into our courts. Under common law, which is self-evident truths founded on biblical principles and virtues. A court of record is a judicial tribunal, a jury, having attributes and exceeding functions independently of the person of the magistrate, designed generally to hold it. He's a traffic cop, and proceeding according to the course of the common law, its acts and proceedings being enrolled for a perpetual memorial. The decisions of the superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeals. The decision of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resorting to the appeal or to an appellate court. In a court of record, when we go in, we don't appeal anything that these people try to do. It's a collateral. They're susceptible to collateral attack. We sue them directly. We don't appeal nothing. We take justice into our own hands inside the court system. And hopefully over time we can teach people how to do that. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court. This is the United States Supreme Court speaking. As conclusive as the on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. In other words, they're saying that the decision of a jury, the United States Supreme Court cannot second guess the decision of a jury. Do you understand that? You can't overturn a decision of a jury. There is no appeal process. The people have spoken. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Law, Black's Fourth, is generally divided into four principal classes, namely natural law, a.k.a. common law, the law of nations, public law, and private or civil law. A court of equity, a court which has jurisdiction in equity, which administers justice and decides controversies in accordance with the rules and principles and precedences of equity, and which follows the form and procedure of chancery, is distinguished from a court having the jurisdiction, rules, principles, and practice of the common law. And what we have is we have chancery courts. That's the problem. It's illegal in this country. It's unconstitutional. Our founding fathers debated it and were clear that we are not going to get lost in chancery courts, because in chancery courts you have kings. The king, that guy on the bench, is as good as a king, and he can decide right off the bench whatever he wants to do. He can make it up as he goes. That's a chancery court. And those are the courts we're going into, and that's why they're destroying us, and that's why we're losing our children, we're losing our elders, we're losing everything in the courts, we're losing our lives, our security, our future, we're losing our liberties. Court of Chancery, a court having the jurisdiction of a chancellor, a court administering equity and proceedings according to the forms and principles of equity. In England, prior to the Judicature Acts, the style of the court processing the largest equitable powers and jurisdiction was the High Court of Chancery. In some of the United States, the title Court of Chancery is applied to a court possessing general equity powers distinct from the courts of the common law. If you go talk to these judges, you'll find out, and you ask the question, they will admit that these are equity courts. Everyone will admit these are equity courts. All of the lawyers will, yeah, these are equity courts. Well, look at these are equity courts proceeding according to the rules of chancery, and they get this from the Judiciary Act of 1789, which Marbury versus Madison in just 4 or 5 years, 15 years later, is, I think it was 1803, said that a lot of what was in there is null and void. Legislators can't, give the judiciary any more powers than what they already have, and clearly the judiciary can't take on any more powers than we, the people, have already given them. You can't transfer the powers of the legislator to the judiciary, and vice versa. We, the people, gave the powers to these people to the process, through these articles, Article 1, 2, and 3. We gave the legislators this particular power. They can't give their duties to someone else. That's for them to do. But they give it to lawyers. Look at the people we elect in and represent us in the legislature. They don't even write the law. Some outside group through the Bar Association writes all the laws and pushes it through, and they just sign it. It's pretty pitiful that we don't realize that and do something about it. Well, that's what National Liberty Alliance is all about. That's what we, the people, need to be all about. That's what the common law process and procedures is all about. And that's what the common law grand juries and trial juries is going to fix. This is our duty and our job. It is our time. The term equity and chancery, a court of equity and a court of chancery, are constantly used as synonymous in the United States. Did you hear that? It's synonymous. Every court you go in is a court of chancery. Let me read that again. The term equity, chancery, court of equity, Court of Chancery are constantly used as synonymous in the United States. If you understand that, now you can argue jurisdiction. If you don't understand that, you're going to be lost in the court. They're going to chew you up, and you're going to lose. It is presumed that this custom arises from the circumstances that the equity jurisdiction, which is exercised by the courts of the various states, is assimilated to the processes by the English courts of Chancery. Indeed, in some of the states, it is made identical therewith by statute, so far as comfortable to our institutions. Chancellor. Now get ready for this one. Black's fourth. Chancellor. In some states, they call judges chancellors. Ultimately, every judge in America is a chancellor. Digest that. Understand what I just said. Every judge in America is a chancellor. No matter what you call him, he's a chancellor. And in some states, they actually call him chancellor. And here is the definition. Black's fourth. Ready? Lord High in England. I don't know about you, but I have one Lord, and that's God. He's the high in America and high in the universe, okay? The Lord High in England, the highest judicial functionary in the kingdom, above the people and therefore repugnant to our Constitution. Let me repeat that. These judges are above the people. They have more. They act on their own authority. They're claiming that their authority doesn't come from you. You're a subject to them. That's how they see you. We need to understand what we're up against when we go into these courts. And we need to understand on how we can turn this whole thing around and put down that they're acting, you know, put down the true law in their court, bring us into the right jurisdiction, and let it be known that they're acting under the color of law. They're committing a felony, and they're subject to collateral damage from our court, not only for civil damages, but also for criminal damages. 20 years in prison in some of these cases. Okay, so above the people, repugnant. He exercises many functions and powers over and above the jurisdiction which he exercises in his judicial capacity in the Supreme Court of Judicature, of which he is the head. In American law, this is the name given to some states to the de facto judge or the presiding judge of a de facto court. Of Chancery. And we have to start talking about the way it is. These are de facto courts. Equity courts and law courts, Black's fourth, the former being such as possesses the jurisdiction of a chancellor, apply the rules and principles of Chancery law, following the procedure in equity. The latter, which is the courts of law, such as have no equitable power, but administer justice according to the rules and practice of the common law. Courts of Chancery lack competent jurisdiction because it lacks power and authority under the United States Constitution. It is a de facto court subject to collateral damage because it violates due process and is a fraud. Now, bear in mind, in Article 3 of our Constitution, I believe it's Section 4, if I'm in the right place, I think that's it. It talks about, no, actually it's, well, it's in Article 3, I'm pretty sure. But in any event, it talks about the courts of law and courts of equity. We do have courts of equity in our nation, but our courts of equity, the Constitution is clear, operates according to the rules of common law, which means these judges, when they're ruling, they are to be following the American jurisprudence, the book written by ultimately the United States Supreme Court over the past 200 years. They have been collectively participating in the writing of that book, and that's a collection of their decisions and the process, the procedures, what is justice, how judges ought to act, what they're not to do, what they can do. But they don't follow that book. We need to be holding their feet to the fire and make them follow that book. First of all, at least right now, I wouldn't even open up a court of equity. I'll stick just with a court of law. I want a jury in everything I do. And that's what we the people need to do until we bring this country back and start to get people who obey the Constitution, who obey the law, who acknowledge that we the people are the authority. Until we get people in the courts that actually fear the people, we will have courts of terror, courts of tyranny, destruction. We will lose our children. We will lose our homes. We will lose everything. And that's what's going on right now. When considered in relation to its origin, it is statute law or common law, one or the other. Which do you want? If you want statutory law, well, you got it. let's leave the courts alone. That's it. You're good. You got it. If you want common law, then we got to return justice. We got to return the king back into the court. We have to acknowledge the king and act under his principles and sit on his bench. And if we're not willing to do that and acknowledge the king of the universe, then live with your statute of law. Again, you know, we go back to the beginning by William Penn, a people who will be ruled, a people who will not be ruled by God are destined to be ruled by tyrants. That's the end results. And that's where we're at, people. It's time to take it back. We don't have much time, because if we don't take it back soon, we'll never be able to take it back. When examining as to its different systems, it is divided into civil law, common law, canon law. When applied to objects, it is civil, criminal, or penal. It is also divided into natural law and positive law, into written law, lex scriptia, lex scripta, and unwritten law, lex non scripta, into law merchant, martial law, municipal law, and foreign law. When considered as to their duration, laws are immutable and arbitrary or positive, when as their effect, they are prospective and retrospective. Now, all of these courts are legal in the United States, and the Constitution has given the authority for the necessary, at least the martial law, or not the martial law, but the merchant, and also dealing with, of course, common law, dealing with, but anyway, there are other courts that are permitted in the United States, but each one of them have a judge, and each judge is held to the American jurisprudence. They're held to the Constitution. They're held to the law of the land. They're held to common law. It must proceed according to the rules of common law and not according to the rules of chancery. In America, we the people have ordained only courts of law and equity arising under the Constitution, and here it is, including admiralty and maritime jurisdictions. That's what I was looking for. Both courts of law and equity ought to proceed under the law of the land, and therefore under the rules of common law. The only difference between the two is that the courts of law proceed under the common law and are decided by a tribunal of 12 jurists, that's we the people, that cannot be appealed. Whereas equity courts proceed under the common law and are decided by a tribunal of one jurist, it's called a judge, elected by the people, appointed in the federal level, of course, that can be appealed. There's an appellate process because they can make an error. The judges of the latter courts are bound by oath to apply the law of the land under Article 6 and continue, holding their office so long as they are in good behavior. Good behavior is obedient to the Constitution and the law of the land. Bad behavior is in violation, acting under the color of law, and mutilating the Constitution and the law of the land. Good behavior, which means conduct that is authorized by law, actions outside of the law would be a felony under the color of law. Common law can be traced back to 1600 BC, also known as Mosaic Law, and was brought to England by the Anglo-Saxons about 400 AD, and was called the Great Charter in the Magna Carta. Confirmato Carturium, October 10th, 1297. Edward, by the grace of God, King of England, Lord of Ireland, and Duke of Guyen, to all those that these present letters shall hear to see, greetings. Know ye that we, to the honor of God and the Holy Church, and to the profit of our realm, have granted for us and our heirs that the Charter of Liberties and the Charter of the Forest, which were made by common assent of all the realms in the time of King Henry, our father, shall be kept in every point without breach, and we will that the same charters shall be sent under our seal as well to our justice of the forest as to others, and to all sheriffs and shires, and to all our other officers, and to all our cities throughout the realm, together with our writs, in the which it shall be contained, that they cause the foresaid charter to be published, and to declare to the people that we have confirmed them in all points, and that our justice, sheriff, mayors, and other ministers, which are under us, have the laws of the land to guide, shall allow the said charter pleaded before them in judgment in all the points, that is to wit, the great charter as the common law, and the charter of the forest for the wealth of our realm. And that's where it first started, at least for us, you know, in England and through America. Our founding documents undeniably establish common law as the law of the land and are the very fabric of America that makes us uniquely different from any other nation before or since. Federalist Papers, page 284, and the civil action between the citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in action at common law may be tried by a juror if the parties or either of them request it. Uncontested in the debate became the law of the land. Federalist Papers, page 383, it has been erroneously insinuated with regard to the Court of Chancery that this court generally ties disputed facts by a jury. The truth is that references to a jury in that court rarely happens, and this was uncontested in the debates, and the law of the land has left out chancery courts. Anti-Federalist Papers, page 128, if a federal town be necessary for the residence of Congress and the public offices, it ought to be a small one, and the governor of it fixed on Republican and common law principles, carefully enumerated and established by the Constitution. It is true, the states, when they shall cede or surrender places, may stipulate that the laws and governor of Congress in them shall always be formed on such principles. This is uncontested in the debates and resulted in a Bill of Rights. This is how we got the Bill of Rights, through this argument right here in the Anti-Federalist Papers. Anti-Federalist Papers, page 138. The trial by jury remains inviolate forever, and no acts or attainder shall be passed by the legislator of this state for crimes other than those committed before the termination of the present war, and that the legislator shall at all time hereinafter institute any new courts but such as shall proceed according to the course of the common law. This is uncontested in the debate and realized in the Bill of Rights. And they tell us we have no common law. They don't know what we're talking about. Amendment 7, in suits of common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 6, all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial and public trial by an impartial jury. The common law records consist of the process, system of jurisprudence administered by purely secular tribunals, that's we the people, juries, grand juries, trial juries, the pleadings, papers and affidavits, the verdict by the jury, and the judgment by the jury. That's the court process. Everything else is BS. After judgment, such errors were reviewable by writ of error. Errors which occurred at the trial were not part of the common law record and could be reviewed by a motion for a new trial after the verdict and before the judgment. Once the judgment is done, it sits forever. Considerations concerning violations need to be done before the judgment, obviously. The United States Supreme Court can intervene and second-guess a trial jury only in the case when someone else's rights have been violated by that decision, and it's brought before that court. They are now bound to protect the rights of that individual. And if that was done, that part will be fixed. But the jury's decision will stand forever. Jurisdiction cannot be assumed. It must be proved to exist. Trial courts also act with jurisdiction when it acts without inherent or common law authority. No judicial process, whatsoever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued, and an attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. The law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on a record of the administrative agencies and all the administrative proceedings. If any tribunal finds absence of the proof of jurisdiction over the person and subject matter, the cause must be dismissed. If they can't show jurisdiction in a court, it must be dismissed. If they don't dismiss this, then you bring that court up because they're susceptible to collateral damage from your court, and you sue every officer in that judge for everything you can get from them. If any tribunal finds absence of proof of jurisdiction over person and subject matter, the case must be dismissed. Civil action for deprivation of rights, 28 U.S.C. 1343, gives the United States District Court original jurisdiction. When it clearly appears that the court lacks jurisdiction, the court has no authority to reach the merits. In such a situation, the action should be dismissed for want of jurisdiction. However, late this objection has been made or may be made in any case in an inferior or appellate court of the United States, it must be considered and decided before any court can move one further step in the cause. As any movement is necessary, the exercise of jurisdiction, judgment made when the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, is void, null and void. 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, 177. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, here is what the judges must obey. This is right out of their book. This is their book on how they're to proceed. Right here. This is the common law rules and procedures for the judge when he rules in an equity court according to the proceedings of common law. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since the unconstitutionality dates from the time of the enactment and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. An unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute not been enacted. I hear an open mic out there. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it poses no duties, confers no rights, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate or to supersede any existing valid law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, it is superseded thereby. 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 177, late 2nd, section 256. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of the law, is in reality no law but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionally dates from the time of its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision to branding it. The conclusion, common law is the law of the land, anything to the contrary notwithstanding. Okay, that brings us to the end of this paper. And again, anybody going into court, you need to understand this. You know, John, let me just go through these papers real quick. Give me one more minute, and I'll open up
okay.
to you, okay?
Yeah.
Let me just go through these papers real quick that's up on our website under the media page. These are papers that define very important terms and positions. You should have this knowledge, and it'll assist you in court. You need to take our civics course, and you should then, therefore, you know, after that, those courses or during those courses, you should be reading these papers. This will teach you how to write, how to lay out, how to do form. This will teach you the law. It gives you all of the authorities. And nothing is said in here that we don't trace back to an authority. It's all in the footnotes. And sometimes it's posted right in the main paper itself. We'll give the authority right there. But some of the PDFs and words that we have up here for the purpose of writing papers and arguing in court and being able to win, we have papers, the Court of Law, a court of record example, courts that resist the Constitution, de facto versus de jure, judicial immunity, jurisprudence, principles of law in the King's Bench, right to practice law, rights, summary proceedings, null and void. Title 26 is not law. U.S. District Courts are Article 3 courts. And we have more papers. I mean, we can put probably 20 more papers up here, but we're putting one at a time, and we're going to be going through these papers over the weeks. And this is how you win in court. Understanding these things, you need to understand your enemy. You need to understand where they're coming from, what they're doing. You need to be able to counteract them, and you need to be able to set your jurisdiction, hold it, and hold their feet to the fire. And if need so, light that fire and burn them at the stake. Because you're not going to win anyway. You don't give them a chance. Not one. We made too many mistakes giving these people too many chances, trying to plead with them. Now, you're not going to win with these people that way. They get one chance. You tell them in the court the way to go. They don't go the right way. You object. You object. You object. You sit down, and when you leave that courtroom, you write a writ of error. You overturn that court, and then you sue every officer in that court. And that pulls them all off that court. Now they're going to have to get all new officers in there, aren't they? And what are they going to be thinking? What do you think they're going to think? What are you going to do to them if they start proceeding down the same road they went to? They'll have no other choice but to try to work a settlement. If not, bring them into the federal court, line them up, make some more money on them, and because you're going to sue them for $25,000 minimum for every one of your unalienable rights that they violate, aren't you? I know I am. And I'm going to sue them for other damages, whatever logically could be deducted from the court, you know, from the facts. Gerard, go ahead.
Hey, I have on mute here. I wanted to have you do like a station identification because they got new people coming in every few seconds on the, you know, on Redneck Radio and Rick and Annie's. If you want to just mention who's on here, so they know that this is that we are a rebroadcast to them.
We're being simulcast by some of these stations. Some of them are simulcasting us and rebroadcasting us. Some of them are just rebroadcasting us.
Right. So
we have confirmed three of them. The fourth one we haven't really confirmed, but we have mentioned, and we got to find out if they're even in with us. And we are, you know, we're open to any other station that wants to broadcast or rebroadcast what we're doing here. People need to learn how to win in the courts. And I want to tell you, there's a lot of poison out there. We've been poisoned, and we got the cure. The cure is truth. The cure is reconsidering your position and understanding the truth. That's the cure. And, you know, we work overtime, really, to make sure that we support, that we actually, you absolutely secure the facts that we are bringing forward, that we show all of the authorities and where this came from. We go right to the roots of the meanings of the words, of the meanings of the courts, of the jurisdiction, and what's really going on. And we have some really, really super, super powerful papers coming up the line. They've been written. They've been corrected. They're ready to go. It's just a matter of time. They're going to be coming out soon, and it's going to shake the – I think it's going to shake the judicial and the political realms. I truly believe that over the course of the next few weeks. Again, we're still behind the eight ball and getting this done. I've been speaking with the people putting this together, and I think this week we may be going forward. But I do want to say one thing that might retard us on this and slow us down. And it's unfortunately, it's the dirty part of this whole thing. It's called money. But we need money. You know, look, if you're sitting here and you're not giving us $5 a month or more, and all we're asking for is $5 a month, okay, to support the effort, to pay the bills. We're going to be sending these papers out to 30,000 oath takers. There's no other way to save this nation. You know, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. If our people that represent us don't know the law, they don't understand what's going on, they have not been up to date and realize the dangers that America is in, they're living in la-la land. Well, we have to wake them up, and we wake them up by making them part of this case. We're not just copying these people. We are making them part of the case, and we're not just putting these papers into one federal court. We are filing them in 94 federal courts, and we're giving a copy to all the oath takers, and we're putting them on the line. We're letting them know, you know, we're going to hold their feet to the fire. They need to obey the law in the places and processes that are their responsibility, and we have to teach them. And over the course of time, this is going to be done. But every mailing is going out to over 30,000 oath takers across America. It covers your sheriffs, your marshals, the special agents of the FBI, the military, all the judges on every level, federal and state, all of the courts, every level, and many others, Congress, all the state Congress and senators, and all of then of course the U.S. Congress and Senate. It's going everywhere. And this takes a lot of time, effort, and work. We need volunteers. We need people to get into committees. We need people to do the things that have to be done. We need money to do this stuff. We're doing a million signatures, And I really want to do this in paper. If we have to do it on CD, we will, but it won't have the effect. You know, we send a million signatures on 100 a page is 10,000 papers, pages. 10,000 pages is about 4 foot high. You know, it's 20 reams. So it's almost 4 foot high. But that's what we have to send to every court. Now, if we have to put it on CD and copy it in PDFs and put them on CD, it won't have the effect, but we'll do it that way, and that, of course, will be helpful. But at least in the one court, the all 94 courts, we should at least get those million signatures in, and more to follow. Now, some people have been doing these signatures, and they'll sign a paper with two or three signatures, and they'll send it in to me. Please don't do that. If you're going to only put two or three signatures on it, get a hold of someone else in your state that's going to do the whole page and sign their paper. You know, or otherwise, we have two or three signatures on one page. We'll have 100,000 papers to make a million signatures. And it's just way, way too much. We can't do that. So everyone should take that paper down there and go out and get 100 signatures. You can go to in front of your, you know, where you shop and get 100 signatures. You know, you can go to a Liberty meetings and get signatures. You get your family, your friends, your neighbors, and so on. Let's get these signatures and fill up the papers. Fill up what you can and pass it to someone else, and maybe they can fill up the rest, and so on and so forth. But let's get it done. But anyway, back to the rebroadcasting or the simulcasting. We have Redneck Radio. We have Shake and Wake. And goodness, I got to look at the names of the other two. Why can't I remember? Gerard, help me out here. Hello, Gerard.
Yeah, Centelli.
Right.
Remember.
I'm trying to think
Gorilla,
of his radio.
Gorilla.
Yes.
Gorilla.
That's
Listen,
it.
Billy's gone off at 11. I'm running him through mine. He came in late, so he's running on my Skype. So he'll be leaving here in a few minutes. So.
Okay. Well, we got all the stuff out here. We're now going to open Q&A. So that's what we're going to move to. If you got anything else to add before we do that?
No, I got a couple of questions in the text chat that we got to get to at some point. You know that Annie sent over here. Nothing
okay.
Big.
You want to? Why don't we open up? Let's ask for those who have been on last week to kind of wait 2 or 3 minutes. Let those who have not been on in the past week or two, let them try to get up first, and then the floodgates can open in 2 minutes. So let's move over to Q&A. First and deal with them before we take the
Yeah, actually, this was a question from last week for you that we didn't have time to answer from Shake and Wake, and this is from Chris, and he wanted to know what you thought about the message of Ron Paul, which many of us know. That you are a Ron Paul supporter, and if you would endorse Rand Paul for president, and I know what you're going to say about that.
I don't get into politics at all. I'm not going to endorse anyone. I'm not going to say good because who knows what people are going to do. You know what? If Ron Paul was running, because he's a statesman and not a politician, boy, I'd be yelling his name everywhere. His son maybe is just as good. I don't know. I haven't been following anything. He may be playing some strategies with the Republican Party. I don't know. So, but we want statesmen. That's what we want. And if Rand Paul was to come over to us here in National Liberty Alliance and say he wants to be a statesman and he's going to stand up for the common law and he takes our civics course and he sits down to learn the process, the true process of law of the United States, then of course we'll support him as a statesman. But the moment he gets into the politics, we'll delete his name as quick as we can put it up there.
Right.
So,
okay. Thank you.
Anything else of me, or can you answer the next questions, or what?
Well, yeah. Let me get back into my screen here. I'm sorry, I went over to the other thing.
Did you hit the delete button on the Q&A or something?
No, a bunch of people
that seem to fall out of there. Now we only got two people in there.
I
so
know, I wasn't
anybody who wants to get
in
the Q&A, get in there. Huh?
I wasn't even on that screen. I was looking at her on my Skype. But anyway, yeah, there's only... Okay, so you want me to... we have next one looks like Rick Anonymous, Speak the Truth. That's Rick. I'm going to open him up.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Go ahead, Rick.
Hello? It's not Rick, it's Irina.
Oh, well, you come in as Rick. That's weird.
Yeah, well, she's calling in. She's on the radio station.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Go ahead, Irina.
John, I have a question for you. For a while, about 5 years, we're dealing with precisely with financial crimes against us, with assets issue, with a real property issue. In quite a bit, we collected some information. You remember me. At some point, I couldn't even express what happened to us because I don't understand. I didn't understand what happened to us. Now we get to the core of it. And quite a bit, common law, constitutional statements, constitutional laws and rights, and due to the process of law, absolutely supported even by penal law, even by statutory laws in this particular part of problem. And we find out exactly what you think, but in relation to the financial crimes precisely. It's it was made executive order 13519 by President Obama. And that particular executive order addressed all the law enforcement, all the city agencies, state agencies, federal agencies, including the law enforcement. And Attorney General Eric Holder, given exclusive power by this executive order to make decisions on the financial crimes. And
so what you're saying is that Obama has given power to these people?
Yes, he giving power. Exactly what that word
says.
Where
do you think Obama got this authority to give power?
He's stating himself that based
right.
on
well,
the...
He doesn't have the authority to give power, does he?
Exactly. But
right. So it's all null and void. And look at the people, as much as the people will put up, the people will get. If the people start to say enough already, then it's going to be enough already. And again, how do you say it's enough already? Well, join up with National Liberty Alliance, get involved, get into the committees, be part of the common law grand juries across across the United States, and let's take our whole nation back. You know, we take the courts back, we take back the administrative office, we take Washington back, that the federal city, and we also take back the legislators, and we can kick the bar. Look, we need to kick the bar out of our legislators. Who the hell are these people? We didn't give them any authority to come in to write these laws, to write all these statutes, to create this prison, this statutory prison that they've created. Look, if you talk to a representative, you know, or you talk to a judge, and every time we talk to even a judge, believe it or not, we talk to judges. What do? They have their lawyers talk to us. They talk to us through filters. Who do these people think they are? We have to pay for their lawyers so that they can talk to us. And why do they hire a lawyer? So they don't have to answer. Why don't they want to answer? Because they're guilty, you know? And we tolerate this garbage. Why do we tolerate this? It's time to stop. Well, this is what we're doing. We're going to stop it. If you want to stop it, let's step up. If enough people step up to do it, and that's the plan of National Liberty Alliance, and we're going to do it and we're going to stop it. But if people decide that they don't want to save America, well, okay, then just don't stand up and we won't get the numbers and we won't do it. So it's up to the people. Only the front page of our website, only the people can save the nation. Only the people. Rand Paul, Ron Paul, no Paul, any Paul, nobody's going to save this nation. Except the people.
Yes, John, I wanted to also point it to you, but by this executive order, not the only that they didn't, they're claiming it was created for economic crisis, to stop economic collapse, but right. In reality, and it should protect the middle class who has the assets, but in reality, what is done, Eric Holder made an order throughout all the...
We don't care what he said. Look, I know that they're doing these things and there's doing other things that we don't even know about. And we don't really care ultimately because we have to fix it and we're going to fix it. And I can tell you that we do have a plan to fix this. It's already written up and ready to rock and roll. Again, it's up to the people to get volunteers out here to do what has to be done here. Just connect to the committees, connect to the groups, get involved. help us, assist us, give us $5 a month. But the bottom line is all of this is when we file certain papers, all of that's going to fall away.
John, I have an offer. I actually spoke to Gerard before. Like some people have cases that traffic cases. Some people have cases that in the family courts. But some people have real estate cases, their assets cases. Either it's civil forfeiture abuse, either eminent domain abuse, either the bank is the perpetrator and foreclosing.
We're going to put a committee together to deal with the mortgages, and that should probably deal with the problems you're talking about, no?
No, I wanted to make it widely, little bit broadly.
Let me just say this, you know, because I understand your problem, and I don't know how far we can go at first. You know, we have certain things that are prerequisites before getting to what you're thinking about, but I have a feeling, I believe that once we start to really put the pressure on the family courts, and I know how we could do this, and there are people with us that know what needs to be done and how to do this, okay? But once we put the pressure on the family courts, they're going to start crawling under rocks because they're not going to be able to stand. I can tell you right now, the family courts cannot stand the light of day at all. These people are regular vampires. Open up the blinds in their chambers, and I'm telling you, they're going to turn to dust. But once we do that, then the power and the authority of the people is going to start to rock the judiciary across the nation. And it all starts in the federal courts. And of course, it's in the state courts taking place, but it starts in the federal courts. Also, the probate courts. It's another target we need to do because they're destroying our elderly. They're destroying everything. People are working all their lives, and they've come to a point and they've collected things. They own their own homes, and then they get ill. And their children try to care for them, and the next thing you know, the state comes in and they take control, and the children can't get nothing. They take everything they own, and they destroy that family, and they take everything that person worked for in their whole life to give to their children and to get through their twilight years, and they make their twilight years a nightmare. So probate courts, we need to deal with that. Also, of course, we have the mortgage courts, the mortgage problems in the courts. We need to deal with that. And I think once we get to that point, I think the rest of the stuff is going to reverberate through the system, and the rest of these people are going to start to back off and slow down because they see the train are coming. But we need them to see the train coming. And that, again, is the people. Only the people can save America. The question to everyone listening to this program today, the question to everyone that's going to listen to this program and through the audio and through the radio programs, the question is, are you going to step up and save America? Or are you going to leave it to the other guy? Because I want to tell you one thing. All those people that are leaving it to the other guy, well, the other guy's leaving it to you. So who's stepping up? Okay, everybody has got to step up. It's your duty. It's your responsibility. Shame on you if you don't. Woe on you if you don't. Woe on all of us if you don't, as a matter of fact, because only the people can save America. So I think your problem's going to be solved. I think once we get through these other court systems, you know, once we get through these part of the processes that we have to set up, the family, the probate, and the mortgage, once we get through that and stabilize there, then we can consider to make it broader. But I think your problem's going to start to be cured because they're going to see the train's coming.
John, my problem, believe it or not, is the abuse of civil forfeiture. That whatever they're saying to us is a civil, we have cases when they went far.
I already told you how to deal with your problem. You can deal with your problem overnight and make it disappear by doing it the proper way. What you need to do is go up and take the civics course completely, and I think you're on the process of that. Take that course completely, okay? Read all the papers that we've been posting and we've been reading on a Monday nights. Read all the papers, understand how to write. Look at the court, how to open up a court of record. We put an example up there, opening a court of record, and work through that. Go into the federal courts and sue every single officer, that's every judge, every lawyer, every person in that court that's an officer of the court. Sue them all, bring them into federal courts, understand the jurisdiction, understand how to hold their feet to the fire, and get them for acting under the color of law. You, at that point, will shut every one of those courts not of record down, okay, they will have to now restock them with new judges and new, because none of those, they can't survive the court. It's a conflict of interest. You're suing them. They got to leave. So now you got all new people in there, and you're going to walk into the court, and you're going to say, well, what are we doing here, Your Honor? Because as far as I know, I opened up a court of record, and what are we doing here? Are we operating according to the rules and procedure of the common law, or are we operating under the equity through the rules and the process of chancery? He'll understand what you're saying, and he'll see what you've already done, and he'll understand that you're going to do the same thing to him if he doesn't do the right thing. I think they're going to try to get you out of that court as quick as possible.
John,
but not until you go on the attack. You have to be on the offensive. Right now, you're in a defensive mode.
No, John, I learned from you a lot. And by the way, I'm offering, if I can develop special version for the real estate, for the assets, to be that complete. And if it's any possibility you can make me responsible for that assets real estate issue, like a separate issue that others, and which I'm not familiar with. This I'm familiar. And if you can send people to me who does have
I know we have a group down in the city. We have Lydia down there. We've got Jason is even back and forth into the city. But we got a lot of people down there that you should be working with them. And I have to take in counsel with other people that are working, at this level with me, trying to figure out where to go, what to do, and what committees to open up. So we want to really talk about it if we want to go further than the committees we've already mentioned. And then the question is we have to ask ourselves, can we open up more now, or should we wait till we get these established a little? Sometimes we may be chewing more than we can handle. We have to build up the momentum. And I will tell you right now, the most important court that we need to fix is the family court system, the CPS problem. That's what we have to fix. That's the first one. And if we can't get the momentum across the nation, if we can't get all of these people that are in these family courts, if we can't get them to notice us and to become part of what we're doing, and we do a class action suit, and we sue every one of these SOBs, every judge, all these lawyers, every one of them, we sue them. And we bring them into the federal court, and we'll do it under the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury in order to, again, desperate times calls for desperate measures. And let's sue these people. We'll reveal it in all the courts, and then we'll sue them. But we need the momentum of the people behind us. If we have 6 or 8 or 10 people, it's a failure. We ain't going anywhere. We need the bulk of people. We need to get the momentum going. So anybody who knows anybody that has a family court issue, they need to be coming to Wednesday night meeting. Anybody who knows anybody that is involved in helping people with family court issues, that are desperate and they realize the corruption and they've hit the end and they're trying to do anything and everything they can to help to get these people, back up again, to get their children back. If you know these people, get them to the Wednesday night meeting and let's get a momentum going. That one court system can then lead into the probate, because we're not going to do the probate on the mortgage until we get the family court up first. And then that could lead into the momentum there. Once we get those three up, then we can take the momentum further into other directions like you're talking about, and that's when we could talk. That could be a month from now. It could be longer. I have no clue. But it's up to, again, I'm going to get back to the same thing. I'm going to be a broken record here. Only
we're going to do
the
that
people can say
we're going to do, you don't have to do at this point anything. If you have the people who has real estate issue or asset seizure issue, could you please send it to me that we can work together and create something that you already created for the family court that we can present it to?
But we'd have to see the leadership of that. And we'd have to understand to see if they understand the process and procedure. We don't want to try to back anything that's going to get lost into fiction. We don't want to get anything into the UCC stuff. the mortgage thing's going to be very close to the UCC stuff because it is the UCC stuff. But it's where it hits reality. When they hit reality, we're going to have to deal with them. But we have to be careful on how we proceed. And the people involved need to understand You know, to be honest with you, there's a few of us, myself included, is going to take these particular cases by the helm, so to speak, and really deal with them and make sure these cases are written up correctly, that they're filed correctly, and that we're able to respond correctly and maintain control of that court. And if people who are leading this, because I don't have time to lead what you're looking at right now, we'd have to have someone who can really lead this and understand how it works. And if they don't, then it's going to be a failure, and it's not going to be good. But again, let's give it a little time before we can move in that direction, number one. And let's see if we can build up the momentum on these other courts. And I truly believe, we get momentum in the family court alone. Believe me, there's going to be a rumble through the judiciary of the United States. They're going to be watching us. They're going to be worried, and they're going to know. And if we make the move into the probate courts, and then we make the move into the mortgage deals, they know the days are numbered at that point. And they also will start to back off and wait a little while on these cases that you're talking about, because they know what they're doing is fraud. They're stealing from the people. They're robbing the people. They know that. And they can't survive the light of day. They just can't do it. That's the key to this whole thing, is to shine the light on them so all the people can see in. The emperor has no clothes.
Yes, but they're killing the middle class. That's why it's going to collapse. So
what I'm trying to say to you is this conversation is too premature. Bring this up in 30 days and let's see where we're at then. And then we'll consider what we can do, but you have to formulate a plan. We have to get a leadership, and we have to have someone at the helm that understands, how this system works. And so someone has to, you have to have a group of people that are educated and really able to put this together right.
I think we, the one who is now pretty much educated, we just need to put it together with the common law in it. So that's we did the other part. I promise.
Okay, why don't you write a plan, and in 30 days let's talk again. Let's give it some time because it's too much for us to chew at the moment.
Okay.
Write a plan. Make a plan on paper. If you get a partner or two, and make a plan, and let's look at it.
But if you meet anyone with real estate issue or money just seized issue, could you please send them to me?
Well, those people, you would have to talk with Eric about that, because Eric's got his finger on the pulse of court cases that are coming in through us, and he'd be able to veer together the people that have common cause so that they can work together. So absolutely, talk to Eric about that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I'm passing it back to you, Gerard.
On you. Okay. The next question is, I don't know, Magic Jack, BIOP Company, 9477. You're unmuted. 9477, last four numbers. You are unmuted.
Okay, is that me?
I guess it is, yes.
Okay, I don't have any Magic Jack. It said it started talking. Okay, I'm involved in county politics. I have been for years. I still am. Now, you guys want me to drop out?
No, not at all.
No. People can be political if they want, but we just don't deal with politics here in National Liberty Alliance, because we're more for the solution, and politics is not the solution. But you know, people should struggle to try to get someone in office if they think they're good and do what they got to do. Hopefully one day we're going to get rid of the politics and just get the process in. So as far as the political process is concerned, especially, we're going to be more involved in that later on. We started off on the political process with the committee men, so we will be back to that eventually, but not until we, you know, save the nation through the courts and then push the other side. But no, you can... Just as long as, you know, we don't get involved with politics here, but you're welcome. Everyone's welcome.
On this forum here. Okay, I understand.
Yeah,
look, if you could take your county back, if you get enough people in a county to run,
absolutely.
And that no common law, that's going to go a big,
well,
big way. Look, if the county...
Just get somebody to run. When you get somebody to run, win.
Yeah, it's hard, I know. And people have a bad taste in their mouth. And look, I was in politics. I was there 4 years. and you end up getting beat up. You know, you do the best you can, but the trouble is you need a team. Whenever you go into a political group, you know, everything's a vote. So if there's five people sitting on a board, if you don't have two other people that'll vote with you, you're done. You're dead in the water. You beat your head against the wall. So it takes a real big effort, and it takes a lot of time. However, I always advocate going on the local level when it comes to running, because look at the federal government. If the counties would all come back, the federal government wouldn't have any place to stick their foot, would they? They stand in the counties. The county sheriff can kick the federal government out of his county. So really, the county is one of the most important, you know, forms of government. And don't berate the towns either, because the towns, you know, when the people of a town speak, even by their stupid statutes, they recognize that they have the power, what they call home rule law, which means that any law that a town passes has the same weight as what the legislator passes. And so you should be using your towns to pass resolutions against things like, you know, the SAFE Act we have in here in New York. And that stuff really hurts them when that happens. That shows that they don't have the hearts and the minds of the towns and the people. And if everybody could go out in their towns, look, there was some gun stuff out west. One town said nobody was allowed to own guns, and another town said, oh, yeah, well, guess what? We're going to make a law where everybody has to have a gun. You know what I mean? So those type of things can happen on a local level. You know, it's been tried for years, though, and part of the thing is, like you said, getting somebody to run, the apathy, how do you get over that? I mean, right now people are pretty fed up, so, you know, if you can get them fired up, and I really think we have a good solution here, because this solution that we're doing, it works all the way from the federal all the way down to the towns. You know what I mean? I mean, look, it's the Constitution, and it's common law. And that has to run through the whole system. And I have a book somewhere. Maybe we can offer it, John. It's called The Republic. And it breaks the Republic down through flowcharts all the way down to the dog catcher, from the president down to the dog catcher, how to set up a checks and balances government. Because the whole idea of a republic is the checks and balances. And what they've done is they spent all these years undermining those checks and balances. I mean, look at Obama. He just taken power into his own hand, and he has a sick Congress who's been bought off that lets him do it. So he got rid of that check and balance, didn't he? But anyway, that's basically, you know, we're not trying to get you out of local politics, heavens forbid, you know?
Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, the next question, you're open.
This is David Lee. My question is may I have a few moments to correct the information about my hearings?
Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, I've been enjoying the hell out of this, so here, turn on the light here.
Okay, now your hearings are where now? Him announcing your hearings there, but where are you? What state are you in, and where? Now, status.
I'm in the state. I'm in Oregon State Republic. You know, the Republic for the state of Oregon, and I'm standing here staring at a document. Now I've got this woman's signature like 9 times on other documents, and we had to recuse this judge for acts of violence. The judge acted violently. I'm fixing to recuse the last judge that they have for acts of violence. Mr. Bristow was there for that. But
we did have something about when the judge acts badly in the court. That is very important that you articulate it. Let the record show that the judge has done this or that. Because when you do finally fill out a complaint, which we, you know, I never thought they carried much weight, but right now they understand that they're having trouble and they're going after judges, but they use the transcript. And if you don't say let the record show, guess what? When they look at that transcript, they won't see it. So you got to train yourself to put it on the record. People don't realize that. Let the record show the judge is acting in bad behavior or whatever. Anyway, I just wanted to get that in there as a so people know.
Right, right. I get that. Like, we were listening. We're talking about American jurisprudence. You know, if a judge has a financial interest, then they cannot be the judge. It's easy to recuse a judge because they all have a financial interest in the outcome of the hearing.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I'm looking at this document, and I've seen this woman's signature a dozen times. Somebody forged this one. This is not this woman's signature.
Well, there's no level of depravity that they won't reach, and
I know
we've had that, especially in family courts. We've noticed that even here, and we've also had judges' signatures stamped in. They were not wet ink. I mean, look at
right.
They do anything and everything that they can to win, and they don't care. And I think
people
think this is normal.
The truth of the matter is, this matter is to be heard on
April 2nd.
It's called a docket call on April 2nd at 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
in Astoria, Oregon. I think it's 749 Commercial. Okay, and then on April 7th. At 9 a.m. is the beginning of my trial. I'm accused of these superhuman acts, but I am physically disabled, medically incapable of committing such a thing. And I have a witness here, Brandy Litz, and her 10-year-old son watched the whole thing. I got 30 drive-bys leading to Brandy Litz's arrest. And then a few more drive-bys before my camera died.
Is this a criminal case against you?
Five criminal counts.
Have you been indicted by a grand jury?
No, I've been indicted by the damn prosecuting attorney.
Okay, well, look, that's what you need to bring up into court. You need to go back into the Constitution, open up the Fifth Amendment, get the Bill of Rights, open up the Fifth Amendment, and read it to the judge. Say, look, that I don't have to answer for any crime except unless I'm indicted by a grand jury. Just read it. And this court can't go any further. You need to sue these people. You shouldn't have let it gone this far, but you probably didn't know that you shouldn't have let it gone this far. Look, I would go into court. I would object to the whole process. I'd bring up the fact that there's been no indictment, therefore there can be... Well, look, then you write a writ of error, okay? You overrule the judge. In that writ of error, you have every right and authority to do that. After all, you know, you're supposed to be in a common law court. You need to open up that common law court with a very simple paper in that court. You file that paper prior to going into the court. You bring copies with you. Make sure they have a copy just in case you didn't have your copy, Your Honor. I got a copy here for you, but I know you've been served. And then when you leave that, you have to object to the whole process. You have to write a writ of error when you leave that court. Under affidavit, everything you need to do is under affidavit. You need to go to the federal court and file a federal case against the judge and every officer in that court. That's all the lawyers. If it's just the prosecutor, then there's two of them. That's it. But if there's more, you file it against all of them, and you sue them, and you serve them right away. Okay, now that whole, you just stopped that whole case. They can't continue any further. Now they got to get a new judge, they got to get a new prosecutor, and let's see once what they're going to do, because he understands where you're going to go with this. You're going to go to the court just one time, and you're going to say, I object to this whole process. I don't know why we're going through this again. I just had this in the other case. Now let me ask you a question. Are we not in a common law procedure in court?
Right.
You know, I have not been charged by a grand jury. You cannot take me and put any criminal charges against me without having an indictment by a grand jury. Can't be done.
Excellent. Anyway,
now there's other things. Even if they were to get the indictment, there's other things you need to, other people that you'll do after if they do that. But they're not going to do that at that point. Go to the federal court. You got to open up. And let me tell you, when you go to the federal court, do not give them the $400. They're going to ask you for the money. You've got to give them a file on demand, and then you're going to say, no, I'm one of the people, I don't pay. Then they're going to ask you to fill out a paper. You say, no, I'm one of the people, I don't fill out the papers either. I have access into my courts. This is my court. You can't charge me for justice. And they should take it. Now, if they don't take it, then you have to then sue the clerk. And because if you pay that $400, you have just walked into their jurisdiction. That's part
right.
of their game.
You just
to get
commercialized the entire operation.
Exactly. But your key
exactly.
thing, look, at, I don't talk to anyone about anything outside of the, when it comes to law, outside of the Constitution. You always got to go back there. You got to look for the authority. You got to look for the control and what controls the court. And let's amendment number 5, no person shall be held to answer. I'm not going to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury. Okay? So you can't hold me to answer to nothing. The other thing that they're going to do is they're probably going to give you a 5 or a 6 man or a 7 man grand jury, trial jury. Is there a trial? Has a jury been selected?
The trial is scheduled for April 7th at 9 a.m. And apparently there's supposed to be 12 people.
Well, that's the other thing they do. The other thing they'll do.
Watching,
you need to be there.
Morons.
You need to be there and object to everything that goes on because they'll try to do some sneaky stuff when you're not there. And the judge is gonna address the jury. And if the judge addressed the jury in my presence, I would step up and say, "Excuse me, I object to this whole process. This is jury tampering. You need to recuse yourself now, Judge. You need to leave that bench right now and recuse yourself."
Right.
And I want a new jury. It's been tainted. They've been tainted.
Yep, they've been tainted. Anyway, they did the same thing.
But you can't even get to that process. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I got to make this point. You're at a point in a process where you never should have gotten to, and you can't let them get there because you haven't been indicted.
Right. Okay. It's not a proper indictment.
Charging instrument.
The charging instrument is merely a true bill, which is a negotiable instrument.
Right, but it has to come from a grand jury. 25 people, nothing less.
Yes.
And if they come with a grand jury of 18 or 7, it's bullshit. It's not, you want a grand jury. Grand jury is jury of 25.
Right. And every time I open my mouth in this court, the judge overrules me. Because I've already been through this in the Seaside Municipal Court.
You have to object and overrule him. I object, Your Honor. At some point, he'll say, yeah, I see. You object to everything. He might say something like that. That's a good thing. Thank you, Your Honor. And then you sit down. Don't worry about it. Look, your power is in the pen. People need to understand. The last thing they want is a paper from you, especially if you know how to write a paper. Your power is in the pen. You leave that court, you write a writ of error, and you overturn the court. And then you sue for violating your unalienable rights under the color of law. Due process is number 1, Fifth Amendment. You'll be able to go through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, well, the Bill of Rights particularly, which is part of the Constitution. You go through the Bill of Rights very carefully. You say, here's one he violated me. Here's one he violated me. If you look at our stuff online and you take some of our examples, you'll see a lot of codes that he violated. He violated under color of law. A conspiracy against you, that's another violation. Because when that judge got together with that lawyer, they created a conspiracy to hijack you into a foreign court. That foreign court is an equity court operating under the Court of Chancery. Look, if you listen very carefully, I don't know how often you've been to our meetings, but for anyone that's coming after a while, if you listen very carefully, my answer is always the same. It's always the same thing. It's the same process, same procedure, same thing. Sue them. And sue them the same way for the same thing, Fifth Amendment.
That procedure removes your rights.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's their procedure, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm learning. I'm on a curve. But I've been studying for 8.5 years. They've been coming after me for 12 years because
they found out that I inherited money. That's the question. Have you listened to Bill Thornton and have you listened and read or listened to Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner? Have you taken the constitutional courses that we've brought together? And then there's a lot more than that. I'm going to try to get another constitutional court.
As of lately, I've been run out of. I was run out of this town 12 years ago. They ran me out of the state of Washington because the attorney that my sister hired for her inheritance came after me for the inheritance. And then as soon as I got to Seaside to write that lawsuit, I met some jackass named Brandon Peterson.
Officer
Brandon Peterson. That man, he arrested me 3 times and he never had a valid cause. He misapplied the law in every case and he fabricated evidence. Every time. Mm-hmm. It's disgusting what they're doing.
Well, I will tell you what you need to do, and you should start working on it right now, the paperwork. You can get a lot of great examples. You can see the process and the structure on the page that we spoke about earlier where you find the jurisprudence paper. Look right in there. Look at all those papers. And look for the example of opening a court of record, and just take that out and open your court of record right now. File, get your paper and put it together. All those papers that you see up there on that page, on the media page, you'll be able to take pieces out of here, pieces out of there, pieces out of here, and construct
right.
your case. Put all your facts in. And remember, the key to the whole thing is an affidavit. And I'll bet you $10,000 to one, okay, that you, if you look into the court papers, they probably don't even have an affidavit on the other side. He may have a sworn statement, but it hasn't been certified. He probably writes
right.
on the end of the paper, I swear to these things are true, and so on and so forth, and sign it, but there's no notary, there's no judge witnessing his signature. That's not a sworn affidavit. And a court case cannot proceed forward without a sworn affidavit. And he
right.
won't make a sworn affidavit because now he puts his own rear end on the line, and he's susceptible of being held for perjury should you prove that he's lied.
Well, okay, on my very first court appearance, I walked into the courthouse wearing a suit and a tie, and I met the elected official. His name is Joshua Marquis, M-A-R-Q-U-E, for Clatsop County. And he walks me out, and my girlfriend is recording the entire conversation. He walks me out into the hallway after the end of the hearing, and he tells me that the Seaside Municipal Court is not a real court. He
oh, my goodness.
Knowledge.
You're not even, hold it, you're not even in the Supreme Court? You're in a town court?
No, they won't.
Oh, hell. The Supreme Court told us to go away.
Yep.
Oh,
Army.
My goodness. Oh, whoa, whoa. That you court has no
court?
Authority whatsoever.
We know.
Well, look, you've got to take it to the federal court. Why haven't you opened the federal court and sued them all for violating your unalienable rights under the color of law and conspiracy? Shut them right down. Shut them down.
We're still gathering information. I want to be an investigator for the National Liberty Alliance because I know right where to look.
But the civics court
to find the fraud.
Right.
And
we
right
do
now,
need,
we
do have some committees where we need investigators. So yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really good at it. You want to see all my videos? we catch everybody lying through their teeth.
On video.
It happens all the time. They do it all the time. They think they're off the record. You know what? It's only a statute that says that it's a crime.
Yeah. And
So anyway, I'm accused of attempting to strangle this officer while he's got me from behind. I got a 10-year-old boy sitting right here behind me, watched the whole thing. There was no attempted strangulation. I was resisting an unlawful arrest.
Right. And you have every right to resist an unlawful arrest.
Right. And Mr. Peterson had arrested me. This is the third time that he had arrested me and threatened me. And guess what? I got two of them on record.
Yep.
And we're going to put them on YouTube, and we're going to make it public. I want everyone to see who this jackass
well, you
is.
Well, you need, look, you've been in the court enough to be able to write a paper, overrule everything he's done, make sure you pack everything up with an affidavit, file it with that court, then use that as evidence,
yeah.
and then file your papers in the federal court, and that will shut that
yeah.
court down. That's what
well,
you need
yeah,
to do, and you need to do that quickly.
In the last hearing, I was arrested by a sheriff's deputy and dragged back into the Seaside, the phony court that I was telling you that the prosecuting attorney knew about, because they're in business together.
Right.
I was arrested, dragged from Astoria all the way down to Seaside to walk in there and tell him I have the right to a court of record. And my jury foreman was a convicted felon. And he says, well, yeah, you kind of have that right. You kind of have that right.
Right.
But we're going to send you some paperwork, and we want to do this thing all over again because we're going to sue you. You know, they're talking to me. And I'm like,
right.
What am I supposed to do here? You guys committed fraud, perjury,
the sheriff has
assault. And then while I'm in doing this, do you know who Laura Weaver is?
Yeah, I know Laura.
Okay, Laura lives with me. Laura and my girlfriend, Brandy, walked over to the county recorder's office and found that the Clatsop County Sheriff has no oath of office. And I got it on in writing.
Let me tell you what you need. You need to get into the federal court. And one of the big mistakes people make moving over to federal court is they try to move that case. You can't move that case into federal court because that case has no right to even exist, and that's the main thing. But you're not moving that case into the federal court. Sure. You are opening a court of record in the federal court to sue these people operating under the color of law, violating your unalienable rights, starting off with the Fifth Amendment. First of all, failure to get a grand jury indictment and just bypassing that whole process, which violates your due process. And therefore, that
right.
alone, that federal court should shut it right down and end it right there. In other words, you should win, and there's no judge that's going to pick up. That court will shut itself down because no judge in its right mind is going to now try to pick up that hammer over there, that mallet, and try to take this other judge's place, because he's got to understand you're going to do the same thing to him. And that's how you're going to end it. That's the only way. Otherwise, I'll tell you right now, you're going to jail.
I know. I'm going to prison.
Yeah.
So you
need to stop it now. You don't have time to do anything else but get into that federal court right now and get your affidavit and shut them down.
Absolutely.
But with that, I think we should move on because
there's
some
more
people.
Time.
Hey,
but,
John, go ahead.
Can I say something? I just wanted to say hi to you, Mr. Suresh. And,
how you doing?
My name is Brandy Litz, and hi to everyone. And I just wanted to say God bless you for everything that you do every day, all day long, 24/7. I am trying to take your civics course. I do live out in the country.
We have no internet.
We have no internet, and it's very difficult for me to be able to sit at the library with a 10-year-old for hours upon hours listening to listen to the civics course. So.
Right.
I was hoping maybe y'all could offer a downloadable version, and then I could study it at home and then go take the test at the library. That would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I'll see if we can put something together. I might be able to do that. I'll have to see if we can get someone to cut and paste all the pages of those courses.
That'd be wonderful. I tried to do it, but it won't let me go forward, so I was just like, well, I can't do anything about it. But I just wanted to tell you guys that after David is done with this and we get him safe, David is wanting to run for Columbia County Common Law Sheriff, and I would like to run for Clatsop County Common Law Sheriff. So we do have that dream and that vision to do that, and I am.
Well, get in touch with Eric. We'll be posting that committee up there soon, and Eric is going to run that at least until we get someone else to run it. But he may decide if he can keep up with it, because he's running also the court observers.
If
he can run them both, he'll continue. But that's the guy to talk to on that, and let's get it going and get people educated for that process.
Hey, I just want to ask you guys.
I do appreciate you guys. I do appreciate you guys, and I greatly pray for you every day. And I am hoping that I can I'm from Mississippi. I'm a Mississippi National, and I am not afraid of them. And when they came to get David in, on the faulty warrant in the court, I stood between them and the officer, and I told them they were kidnapping him. I wanted to see the affidavit, the warrant signed by a judge, and they said, well, you can see it later. So I did stand up for David, and that's why I was arrested, because I've never been arrested before May of last year, because I took my tags off, and I put on non-commercial private use, and
right to travel.
Right to travel. people when I found out I wasn't supposed to pay registration and, you know, fees and insurance, and I learned of this, I was like, oh, heck no, because, you know, you know, I learned that I had natural inherent rights from God, and I am very
thankful.
Just
so you know, that's an uphill battle, and if you're willing to put the time into fighting that battle, okay, but, you know, I don't fight that battle because I don't have the time. My battles.
Right.
I choose my battles, and everybody needs
like
to
that.
Choose their battles. You know.
But I am not I'm not fearful of them. And anything that you need someone that is not fearful of them, please call me because I'll be glad to do anything you ask me to do.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. Yeah. Look, get in touch with the district coordinators and volunteer, or get in touch with one of the committees once we get that list. We'll be listing that up this week. And get in touch, get involved any way you can, anywhere you feel you have the ability to participate and contribute. But with that, we got to move on because we have
all
like
right, God bless y'all. Have
7 minutes
night
left
and
people left in the queue.
Look, I'm wondering if either one of them have seen Laura. I've been trying to get a hold of Laura. And
she lives on our property. She lives on our property.
Oh, so she's okay? Okay. All right,
yes.
I'll try her some other time.
Her babies are fine. She's fine, and we protect her. You know,
thank
everywhere
you.
She goes.
With
thank
guns.
You.
With guns.
Thank you. I feel better. Okay, we're going
to
move on.
Yeah, she is wonderful. She is doing just fine. We offered for her to stay to give her peace and to give her refuge and give her a little time to where she can get her family and things together. And we are willing to do that for anyone that is
well,
in need.
Tell her I was asking about her. I appreciate that.
I sure will. And God
have
bless y'all. You'll have a wonderful evening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Listen, John, Lydia sent us some stuff on 28 U.S.C. 1746 about not having something notarized but sworn under penalty of perjury. And the language that they use, that it is admissible in court as long as it's sworn to properly. And that's what that U.S. code deals with, U.S.C. 1746.
What you're saying is that you can do a sworn statement without having it notarized? Is that
yes.
What you're telling me?
Yes,
that's not true. I don't care what code says anything. It doesn't matter what statute says anything. This has been around for thousands of years, and a U.S. code cannot change that. It's common law.
Yeah,
it has, and they want that there because they want to get court cases going. So they'll hold you to you know, perjury if they can get you.
Well,
they don't want to be held to perjury.
This is a good lesson because this is 28 U.S.C. section 1746. And it has to do with unsworn declarations under penalty of perjury. And they address the where the declaration has the same effect as a notary under 1746. And there's certain language that has to be said. And then there's certain things that it doesn't work for, such as an oath of office.
What USC is it?
It's USC. It's 28 USC. 28, subsection 1746. I thought we should look into it because if that's going to be an issue, you know what I mean, people will be bringing it up, and we want to keep ourselves clean and pure. And if it does work, then we should know that it can, you know. But they talk here about
I'm going to go look it up. I can absolutely, without any doubt, guarantee you that it doesn't hold up in common law court.
Well, then there's a good point to be brought up then. Which
mm-hmm,
means
you
have to be careful using U.S. code. Everybody thinks U.S. code, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good. Well, here's a case where maybe that it's violating common law. All right, so I'm going to go ahead. We only got a few minutes left. I got Massachusetts Cynthia. You're open. Go ahead.
4 minutes.
Oh, hi. Hi, how's everybody?
Good.
I'm learning a lot. You know, I went through a horrendous 3-4 year family court battle, and I won't get into the details. All I want to say is that it was politically motivated, rigged, that I would lose custody, although, you know, I was forced into this. It's not like I went there voluntarily.
Oh, absolutely. They make money on your kid children, believe me.
Yeah, it's driven by my son's father, you know, and so they took custody away, and I had to, out of coercion, to try to get my son back. So it took 3-4 years, and I lost anyway. I mean, the whole thing was rigged. But, you know, when we get into, I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it. It took me a year to just get over the trauma of it, to even talk about it. I did everything. But I look forward to getting involved with the family court group that is starting up, because I learned a lot. I'm learning a lot. Learning the law, and I just get so sick having to revisit, you know, this ordeal that I went through. But out of it, out of this coercion thing, I came out and became a defendant. So I ended up in criminal court and got charged with some kind of, I'm researching this crime having to do with not imposing on the other party, you know, the husband's personal liberty. So it's some kind of statute that if you violate that in any kind of way, it turns into a criminal matter, and then so you're like a criminal now. So I'm just horrified with I'm learning these statutes, and I'm going through an appeal process right now. That's why I'm studying this. But my question is this whole jurisdiction issue, okay? I am a child of God. I believe in Jesus Christ and everything. The whole ordeal, okay, because it was so political and so forth, so many attorneys involved, attorneys I don't even know, they were getting notices about this case. The whole entire thing was so full of errors, that, I mean, I'm still writing them down. It was a prank.
Listen, don't bother studying their stupid statutes. The whole thing, they didn't have jurisdiction. If you learn common law and you stick to your jurisdiction, you would have beat them anyway. And you would have pulled it out of that court in the first place. It wouldn't have been in that court. You would have taken it to the federal court because they're violating your unalienable rights. And that's the long and the short of it. They didn't have authority to do anything they did. And their stupid statute doesn't mean anything. It only means things because we consent into it by answering it. It doesn't even deserve an answer, but you have to protest it, and you have to put them, you know, in their place. And once you learn how to do that, like John says, you study the stuff, you learn how to write the papers, you learn how to open the court of record, you don't have to get in all that. And the lawyers love that crap because they all make money, they all write, each one gets a piece of you, and that's what it's about. Is them taking you and cutting you up. You might as well get diabetes and let them cut your arms and legs off, because the courts are just a form of diabetes that steals your appendages, and that's what they do.
They wouldn't give me my license.
Right. But the whole point I'm trying to make is the deception, and like the common person, you know, I'm sitting here still learning law, learning common law, statute, and things
Time's
like that.
Up.
I mean, but the common person doesn't know all of this stuff.
Yeah, well, we're running out of time now. We could pick this up, you know, and get into it a little further. But, you know, we have the answers to all that, and people have to educate themselves. It's all about education, and it takes time. And you know, not everybody's up to that, but you certainly can get help here, because we have plenty of people that can help you.
I don't think we need to sit down and study and learn. I mean, we need to know basics. You know, you walk around, you have a constitution in your head, you know, because you learn that along the way as you're growing up. And you go into these courts and they're doing all these tricks on you. I mean, that in and of itself is fraudulent and deceptive. You know what I mean? So why does anybody have to go through that? You know, we have to learn, and that they're playing pranks and tricks, and you know, playing around with these statues that they're making up. I mean, why do we?
You don't. The only reason you do is because you don't know where you belong. That's all. It's simple. It's really simple.
We've come to the end. So,
it's Dorothy. Right. You click your heels and you go home. It's that easy. Believe me. Anyway, we have to go now. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, we're sorry that we didn't get everyone. We still got about 5 or 6 people out there, but we'll pick you up next week, and maybe those 5 or 6 people can try to get into the front line of the next week's open forum. But with that, we're going to say good night, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And those interested in our Bible studies, we have them on Saturday evenings at 7. Okay, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming, and Lord willing, again, we'll see you next time.
As I look out into the night and count the stars all shining bright, I wonder where I am and where I'm going. Sometimes I think I've lived before. I seem to see beyond the door, but just a crazy notion I leave showing. And know by then the life that we were meant for. But I see you leaving, leaving by my back door. You were the one to give it all. You fight a war that's never won, and you come back to start, cause you seem really dying. You reach a point where nothing lasts. You play the part that someone cast you into. Now their machines keep right on lying. I want the world to be a place. Know by then the life that we were meant for. But are you leaving? Leaving by my back door. Are you leaving?